across the UK, online and on DAB.
Howard Hughes on Talk Radio. Controversial conversation and outspoken opinions. Powered by the passion of the spoken word.
It's speech radio, Jim, but not as you know it.
Howard Hughes
on Talk Radio.
Across the nation on Talk Radio, and if you're surprised at this, you want to try being me. I didn't know about it. We'll talk about this a little bit later, but I didn't know that I was doing this until about 2 o'clock this afternoon. So that's probably the best way to do it, because I was thinking on the way here that the radio thing, certainly for me, because I've done news for years, and I'm not going to bore you with that again, but the radio thing is about preparation, right? And I'm one of these people who even if I don't use it, I have to do copious amounts of preparation, loads of notes and research and all kinds of stuff. Not because I necessarily do any of it, which is a bit of a waste of time, really, but just because it makes me feel better. Now, tonight, I've got a producer. Thank God for that, you say. That's Hayley. Hayley, how nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too.
And Hayley has forced me, kicking and screaming almost, not to do any preparation for tonight. So I've got a few ideas in my empty head, and we're just going to take it wherever
we're
it's going to
go,
really.
We're going to go with the flow, aren't we?
And I think that's great. It's, what do they call it? It's liberating, really.
Yes.
I think 20 years ago it would have scared the proverbial out of me. But tonight, you know, that's what I mean. They've seen it, done it, been around the block. So listen, if you're listening to this in whichever far-flung part of our nation you happen to be, or maybe you're in the nation's capital, or in Scotland's capital, Wales's capital, Caerdydd, land of my father, wherever you happen to be tonight, then it will be nice to hear from you, because you can help me along with all of this if you've got any thoughts about stuff. Thank you very much to my unexplained, I'm not going to call it a fan page on Facebook, because that makes me sound a little pretentious, but my unexplained group page. Loads of people on there, which is nice of you to acknowledge the fact that I'm on tonight, but please come on and talk. One of the things that we can do tonight, sorry, Hayley, I'm talking all over you. See, this is the problem. You're winding
you're
up.
You're not talking over me, because I'm not talking.
No, but you look as if you want to.
Oh, I'm very fine.
I'm thoughtful and considerate of people who work for work with me, let's put it that way. But no, my unexplained Facebook page people, if you've ever wanted to ask a question about that show, if you've had an experience that you want to put before a wider audience, then we can do a bit of that tonight. I suppose what we're saying really, though, Hales, is we can do it any way we want, really. Don't you think? We
yes,
can go any direction we need to go. But it would be really nice to hear from you. We've got some numbers here that you may have heard before. 0344-499-1000 is the main number. And if you call me from outside the UK, I've got at least one person listening from outside the UK. That's Israel, who's in Mexico. Confused? You will be. Israel was in touch with me a little early. He said, you're going to be on this thing. How do I listen? So I've told him how to do that. So Israel, the number for us, for you, is 44 country code 344-499-1000. That's country code 44. If you're outside the UK, 344-499-1000. Call us for a couple of seconds. We'll call you right back. So we're not going to run up your bill. But just nice to know, you know, what's happening today in Guadalajara or whatever you happen to be. The only part of Mexico I've ever been to was Tijuana. You know, if you go to California, right? No, you've never been to California.
Never been.
You haven't lived.
Love to.
Only went there once, and it was nice. But you go down from Los Angeles and you drive down the freeway on the coast. And you're looking at the Pacific Ocean all the way down. Then you get down to San Diego. If they don't say it like that, they're like, I'm going down to San Diego. You're San Diego. And then you've got La Jolla, which is where all the artists live and stuff. Then you've got the border, where you can park your car for the day if you want to. And then you walk through the border guards and all of those things, and you go over like a bridge arrangement. And suddenly you're in Mexico, and it is completely different.
Oh, wow.
Tijuana. I've still got the sweatshirt from the Hot Rock Cafe, Hard Rock Cafe in Tijuana. It's the only thing I bought there. But anyway, Israel, if you're listening in Mexico now, you said you would, give us a call on that number that I told you, and we'll put you on here, and, you know, we'll talk about Mexico and stuff like that. But tonight we can really talk about anything. I've got some ideas, but I don't want to foist them upon you, because that's not where we're at. Should we start taking calls then?
Hey? Please, go
let's,
on.
Let's roll
do
it. Is that a judgment of me then, Hayley?
What?
Get this man off. Let's get the calls on. Let's get Alan on. Alan, you know, once every 6 months I get the chance to speak to Alan Caddick. So, Alan, in Birmingham, how are you tonight, Alan?
I'm about Hayley, Wendy and Cass.
God.
I've no idea where they are tonight. Nobody's told me, Alan. I think they might have been temporarily kidnapped, but I've got a feeling they'll be back, you know, very soon. Probably not tomorrow night, though, Alan.
Well, can you ask Amy, because she's running the phones tonight.
I will. Amy, what's happened? Please can somebody tell me, because I don't know. Has he gone to see a gig or something?
He's gone to see Kiss, yeah.
He's gone to see Kiss. Are we allowed to say that, because we've said it?
Yes.
Yeah, no, he's gone to see Kiss. Where's he gone to see Kiss, Amy? This is like one of those marriages. Will you ask him to pass the sugar? Do you know where he's gone to see Kiss?
I'm not entirely sure. Okay. I mean, somewhere in London.
Somewhere in London. So there you go, Alan. They're not playing Aston Villa's ground. They're playing London, apparently, Kiss.
Well, Aston Villa's a Premier League football team now. Our first game's going to be in London on the 10th of August.
Is it? How do you know that so soon? Do they work those fixtures out so soon?
The fixtures came out.
Did they? Are you going to be coming down for it?
I'm not sure, but it's live on satellite television.
Oh, well, you'll be able to watch it then. Of course, our sister station, TalkSport, is very good at covering those things as well, Alan.
Well, it's a half-five kick-off.
Is it? Do they do that for telly these days? Is that all for telly?
Yeah. Talking of telly, going through the internet, and I found it on Abbott. I won't play yet, see what you think.
Okay, go on then.
Don't take chances, take TV time. This week's exclusive, the untold story of the boy who took to crime, yet became Taggart, the tough Glaswegian cop. A new series starts next Wednesday.
I know that voice.
Today talks frankly about her unsettled and insecure life, and her starring role in L.A. Law. Read how George Segal sang to a lady in the audience, and then married her. Send your free knitting pattern, and don't miss anything on ITV and Channel 4. Take TV time.
God, hey, that's going back at least 35 years, because they do the commercials with Don't Miss Anything on ITV and Channel 4.
1987.
I think I worked with the guy who did that voiceover, you know, Alan. I'm trying to think. I think it might have been John Sachs. Do you remember him?
Yeah.
There were some DJs, you know, there was an era of DJs, and I spent a lot of my career, I was telling Hayley before we went on tonight, I spent a lot of my career working on music radio stations, doing the news, and looking up to these great DJs, you know, people like John Sachs. But there was a time in London on the radio where everybody sort of sounded a little bit like this. It was all sort of, and it was very hard to tell anybody apart, because everybody sounded like Humphrey Bogart, you see.
Was it LBC?
Well, I don't know who they are. I think they closed, didn't they? But, I did work, I seem to remember distantly, dimly working there. But Alan, I worked everywhere. And we've discussed this before, because I worked in Birmingham. I was on BRMB, another radio station that doesn't exist anymore.
Would change its name to Free Radio.
Well, it did, but, you know, it's, you know, speech radio is where it's at now, Alan, don't you think? That's where you are.
Yeah, I mean, commercial stations, they need to take a leap out of BBC, like what they've done with WM. A mixture of speech and music.
I thought they closed that as well. Yeah, this is all news to me, Alan.
WM's still going.
Is it really? Well, it's probably got, you know, listening figures going through the floor since we came on, I would have thought. But what do I know about anything? So what have you been up to today then, Alan?
Well, I was on the paper one this morning, delivering the papers, early start. I was up at 5, so I can start work at 6.
How big is your paper round then? How many houses do you have to do?
I deliver 26 papers to 21 houses.
How many papers?
26.
To how many houses?
21.
Okay.
So some houses double up.
Okay. And what's the most popular paper that these people get?
The Birmingham Mail.
Is it? I remember the Birmingham Mail. There was one in the morning when I worked in the Midlands.
That was the Birmingham Post.
The Birmingham Post.
The Evening Mail.
Yeah, and then we always, in that newsroom that I worked in all those years ago, our day was not complete until we'd had a look at the Birmingham Post. And if there were stories in the Birmingham Post that we were not running on the radio, then we had to get them. You know how many years ago that was, Alan?
About 30. 30, 40 odd years ago?
Well, please, excuse me, not 40, but it was the thick end of 30 years ago. And that's how things used to work in those days, you know.
And also, there used to be a sports paper on a Saturday night called the Sports Argus.
What was the pink one? There was a pink paper.
That was the Sport Argus.
There was a pink paper in the Midlands, though, wasn't there?
That was the Sport Argus.
Was that, okay. But there was a Sunday, the Midlands had its own, it may still have its own, Sunday paper.
Sunday Mercury, still going?
The Mercury was a great paper. All those crime stories that you would miss during the week, they were all in the Mercury at the weekend. I mean, the Mercury was great. It was like a cross between the News of the World and any local evening paper. Sorry, this is going to bore. People who are not in the Midlands are not going to get this. But you and I know these things.
We're educating people at the same time.
That's exactly why. And that's what we're here to do. I mean, we're not the BBC, thank God.
We're technically a commercial station.
Well, we're not
the mainstream commercial.
Well, not just technically. I think you'll find we're root and branch right at the core. That's what the boss was telling me only last week.
I hang on his every word. FM.
No, that's true. But, you know, I tell you what I did. I don't know if you've ever done this. Have you got more than one DAB radio, Alan?
I listen through me Amazon Fire Stick.
Oh, do you? That's a very good way, because the streaming on that, I think, is very good. But I had a little experiment when I went on my little holiday. I took 3 days away and went round Wales, and I was listening to DAB stations, you know, all the way through, and I got talk radio all the way down through Wales, all the way up the M4. And I realized for the first time that, you know, what they used to call FM is gone, it's dead. And everything now is on DAB. That's the place to be.
Or you can get an app on your phone.
Or you can get on it these days if you want to be even further ahead of it. You know, I've got, and you want to get one of these if you haven't got one of these, but an internet radio. Have you got one of them? Got to get one of them.
Well, I've got an app on my phone called TuneIn Radio.
Oh, I've got that. I'm on that. Both my podcast and my other unexplained show on the radio here, they're both on TuneIn. Did you know that?
I didn't know that, because I was listening to a station called Jingle My Radio, which played nothing but radio jingles.
Do you like radio jingles?
Yeah.
Alan Caddick, you and I could have that. Hayley, my producer here, would throttle me in the studio. If we started talking radio jingles, we would be here. What's the time now? 10:15?
I'd probably join in.
3:15. What are your favourite ones? Do you like Jam from America?
Yeah, the Jam one's really good. Especially the Radio 1 jingle package from 1987.
I like that one too. But I like the ones from even before that. You know, the ones that went the happy sound off. There's another station that's gone.
No, Radio 1's still going.
Well, they're not that I've heard. But, you know, back in the day, if you hear radio stations, like, from the past, and Alan and I, you know, appreciate this, and by the looks of it, Hayley, you would do too.
Oh, yes. I like a jingle.
All these sung jingles. I have a big... Have you got a collection of them, Alan?
No, well, I'm just an Anorak.
So am I. It's sad, isn't it, really? But that's the two of us. But I've got these CDs, and I haven't played them in ages, that are full of hundreds and hundreds of radio jingles, all the way back from the 60s and the Pirates.
And Pams.
And Pams from Dallas, who were the original jingle company. And then Jam Productions became bigger than them. And then there was a guy in Manchester who I think has retired now, called Steve England. Old friend of mine, he was on the radio in Manchester, and he was very good with it. He used to do this show on a Saturday morning on another radio station that doesn't exist anymore called Piccadilly. And when I was a kid, I used to have the tape recorder set for 11 o'clock every Saturday morning, because Steve England would do this show that was full of jingles. But Steve, so that you didn't get clean recordings of them to use yourself, he would talk all over them. But he had amazing jingles. He had a jingle that I bet you haven't heard, that is the Emergency Broadcast System. If you go on YouTube, Alan, and find Emergency Broadcast System, EBS, you'll get a jingle where in America, and they still do this, they have an emergency broadcast system for if there are floods, if there's an earthquake or anything like that. But they have a jingle that tells you that this is a test of the emergency broadcast system. It's fantastic. It runs for about a minute. Then there's a pause, and then they go beep, and then they come back to the end of it, and they say, this concludes this test from the emergency broadcast system. You didn't know that, did you, Alan?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so what, your favourite jingles are the Jams ones, are they?
Yeah. My favourite one is Radio 1 news jingle from 1987, the Beacon Radio jingle from 1991 where they did the phone number.
Beacon Radio was great. I remember listening to Beacon Radio when I was a kid. You could. My dad would drive me down to Chester, because I think you know this, I'm a Scouser, really, originally, stuff like that there, you know. And my dad would take me on a Saturday down to Chester. We'd go shopping. But one of the reasons for going to Chester was because you could hear Beacon Radio. It doesn't exist anymore. There's another one. You hear Beacon Radio there, and they had these great jingles that used to have all sorts of effects on them.
Yeah, because in 1987 they split from one station in Wolverhampton because they created a new one for Swampshire.
Yes, they did. They did. This is going to be a... We're either educating an awful lot of people here, Alan, or we're boring them silly. If we're boring them silly, I'm really sorry for that, but those of us who are into jingles, Alan and me, we understand these things, don't we?
Yeah, definitely.
So listen, did you ever want to be, and you can tell me, you might never have told Ian, did you ever want to be on the radio?
Yes, I did. I actually done hospital radio many years ago.
And what shift did you do?
I did a Friday afternoon show.
Okay.
Called the Friday Flutter.
The Friday, and what happened on the Friday
there
Flutter?
There were 3 hours of music and racing results, and we sometimes had live coverage, but we had to say who was doing the coverage, because we were regulated by Ofcom.
Quite rightly too, I would say. Alan, it's really nice to hear from you. I'm really pleased that you called. And like we say, I think the last time I talked with you was about Christmas, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I was doing one of my fill-ins. And you always know that it's going to be all right when Alan phones.
Yeah.
You know? If Alan phones, then you're probably set all right.
Yeah.
Well, listen, have a good night, Alan.
I'll speak to you soon.
Take care.
Bye.
And play a jingle for me. And listen, I'm really sorry if you're into other things, other than radio jingles, I understand. I remember somebody once at a radio station that I worked at, and I've worked for dozens of them, said to me, Howard, it's like this. People, he was in the sports department, and he said, people who are into jingles are not into sport. And he was absolutely right.
Really?
Mm. Are you into sport as well as jingles?
No, I'm not. But so I just didn't think there was that kind of, bucket of people. Do you know what I mean?
Bucket?
Well, how can you bucket people to say, right, you definitely don't like this if you don't like that?
Well, I don't know. In my case, it was right, though. It was right. You know, I was not, although my dad kind of schooled me in the Liverpool way of things. So, you know, I always get that feeling whenever Liverpool win, like when they won, you know, the cup, the European Cup recently, I was celebrating, you know, with my dad, who's not with us anymore, but I can imagine him cheering.
Yeah.
So that's what he brought me up to back in the day. So there, I'm lapsing into my Scouse accent now.
Well, we need to find somebody that likes sport and like jingles, because I believe they're out there.
Do you think so?
I think so.
Well, there's a challenge then. If you're listening to this, then you must like radio, I would have thought. Otherwise, you wouldn't be listening to it. So if you like radio jingles and you're also a sports fanatic, then you're going to go against the trend, I think. The other thing to say is that I'm still waiting to hear from any of my people from the Facebook group for The Unexplained. You've been very good at responding to the fact that I posted earlier today, I'm going on the radio in a slot that is not mine. And I said, well, I didn't say help. I just said, would be nice to hear from you. And, you know, those questions that you asked me by email that I was trying to get back to you and answer, it would be nice if you could phone up and ask me one of those questions. Anything you like, really, because I'm a mine of useless
information. Do a question and answer session.
Ask Howie. How about Ask Howie?
Ask Howie.
Whatever.
That needs a jingle.
Well, we could probably have one done. I did have a jingle made for me once. It's true. Years ago, a girlfriend wanted to buy me the ultimate present.
She made you a jingle?
And on one of the little tunes that I've got here, it actually starts with part of it. But we'll play that later. We don't have to do that right now. So listen, rather than me just sit here talking rubbish, it will be nice to hear from you tonight. 0344 499 1000. If you're outside the United Kingdom, then it's 44, drop the zero to 344 499 1000. If you want to text, you can text us, talk and then a space and your message to 87222. If you want to tweet on the Twitter, then you can tweet at Talk Radio. My name is Howard Hughes. I know it's a shock. Just imagine, though, how much of a shock it is for me. Here with Haley, live across the nation on the one and only, the mighty Talk Radio.
No nonsense discussion.
Howard Hughes
on Talk Radio.
Love you, but long as there are stars above you, you never need to doubt it, I'll make you so sure about it. God only knows what I'd be without you. If you should ever leave me,
well, I have to say, oh, Howard Hughes on Talk Radio, by the way, but I think you know that by now. I nearly had the chance a few years ago to go and see the Beach Boys appearing at Newbury Racecourse. And one thing and another, I didn't get the chance to do it, but I did get to interview Mike Love. You know who Mike Love is? He's one of the lyrics geniuses with the Beach Boys.
Lyricist, I think they call them.
Well, I don't. It's late at night. I normally do it early mornings. I don't get all that. But I interviewed Mike Love, who was a very nice man, but I've always wanted to talk to Brian Wilson. You know, Brian Wilson was a crazy genius in the nicest possible way, but, you know, he went through it all, life-wise. You know, he experienced just about everything there is to experience and came out the other side of it all. And I think you have to have been through all of that stuff to have that level of genius, don't you think?
Definitely.
Which is why I'm what I am and he's what he is, I think. But I like to tell the story behind the music as well. Does Ian Lee do any of this? I'm asking Amy behind the glass here. Does he tell the story behind the music, or does he just sit here?
Depends on the music.
Well, I happen to like that. But then I didn't discover Pet Sounds, the album that came from, until I was late 30s, 5 years ago. You know, I'm sorry. And then I bought it, and I played it all day. And my neighbour, God rest his soul, Peter next door, who sounded a bit like this, he was like an old-fashioned policeman, and I played it all day. And I played it loud all day, and I forgot for half a minute that I live in a flat, and you've got to think about people who live around you occasionally. So I was just, you know, I was on holiday, and I was off on one there playing it, and they knock on the door, he said, "You don't live here. I know you're on the radio," he said, "but it's not a studio. Can you turn that down? It's been going through my floorboards all day." Sorry, I'm just being stupid now, and there's no room for that on broadcast radio. I think you're fine. Now, I said we've got listeners all over the shop. Here's a challenge for you. We normally do this on The Unexplained on Sunday nights, if we feel like. We will sometimes say, whereabouts are you listening? And then I'll get people like Shane listening in Sydney. There's a guy in Christchurch, New Zealand, and another guy in Tokyo. Oh, no, what's the other one? Beginning with an O. That other city in Japan, beginning with an O. Onkyo, whatever, I don't know what it's called. No, Onkyo, that's electronics. Anyway, I get people everywhere. Right now, we have, live on the Howard Hughes Show, filling in for Ian Lee, we've got, where is it? Graham, in Mexico. Graham, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you, Howard?
I am very good, Graham. Thank you very much for calling in.
Yeah, I haven't spoken to you for a few years now.
Okay, where did we last speak then, Graham? Remind me. Come on now.
Oh, I bet it's about 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay, I must have been somebody. Were you in Mexico then, Graham?
Yes, I've been over here many years.
Okay,
countless years. Over here since 1994.
Are there many Brits in Mexico?
Well, where I am, there's a few of us meet up. I know about 15 of us. Right.
Mm-hmm.
In other cities, there's a lot of Brits. Really, they say, I don't know if it's true or not, there's more Brits in Mexico than there are Americans.
Yeah, well, I've heard a lot. You know, it's not often talked about, but I think there are a lot of Brits. I remember a guy that I knew at the BBC years ago. He went to live in Mexico and was very happy. His name was Colin. Colin went to live there, and he was very happy there for a good long while. So what's the attraction, then, of going to Mexico? Is it easy to get in there?
Well, it's easy to get in, yes. Because obviously I worked in England. I'm retired now. Mm-hmm. I took early retirement. But I met my wife many years ago. My wife's Mexican, you see.
No, sir. What's her name?
Rocio.
Rocio.
Yes.
Okay. So when did you meet? How long ago?
Oh, I met her in, I think, 1987.
Sorry, I'm prying now, aren't I? I like to be nosy about people. So, you know,
for a holiday. I went to Acapulco in 1987.
Really? And were you going loco in Acapulco?
Oh, yes.
Like Four Tops, wasn't it? Four Tops. Going loco in Acapulco. So
I don't think it wasn't the Four Tops, was it?
Who was it then? If you know who that was, then I'm very keen to know.
Was it Neil Diamond?
Temptations. I think it was the Temptations.
Was it?
Yeah, I think
I'm
it was. But I might be wrong.
No, it was the Four Tops.
It was the Four Tops.
You were right, first time.
Going in Acapulco. So, look, you went out there and you met the woman of your dreams. for you were on holiday.
The hotel has it booked into, there was a medical conference going on, because my wife's a doctor, you see.
That's
useful. She was at the conference, and I just talking to a few doctors at the bar, there's some from England, some from the United States and Canada, and places like that, you see. And my wife was talking to them, and I was talking to her. And later in the evening, she said she comes from a different city. She said, would you like to visit before you go back? And I said, I'd like to visit different places. So I came over to this part of the country for a week, got to know her. Then we kept in contact. About every 6 months, I was coming over here for a holiday, spending time with her. Then she was spending time in England, you see. And then 3 years later, she said, well, all this travelling around. I said, why don't we just get married and I take early retirement and I come over here?
And when, just remind me when that, well, you first met in 87, so when was the move?
I got married in 1990.
Okay.
Because my wife lived in England then, you see. She came over with me. Then when I took early retirement in 1994, we came over here. We said, well, it's going to be Mexico then.
I'm going to ask you a really stupid question now, but then I've been doing that for an entire career. What is it like to live in Mexico if you're a Brit?
Well, I like it. The people where we live, they're very nice, friendly, you know. It's, of course, we've got the weather, you know. But at the moment, it's a rainy season, though. We're going to get a downpour about 6 o'clock in the evening, and that'll go on most of the night. But in the daytime, it's nice and warm. Temperature at the moment, about 25 degrees.
Well, it's exactly the same as a lot of the UK now, Graham.
Right, I know, because I was talking to my sister this morning, and you get some nice weather now, don't you?
Now, is Mexico one of these places where you can have a 15-bed mansion for about £250,000 then?
Oh, but up £250,000, you can buy a really nice place for £250,000. Mine's worth about, I said about £180,000, my place.
All right, and what's it like then? Tell me, how many bedrooms has it got?
I've got 4 bedrooms,
mm-hmm.
All en suite.
All of them?
Yeah, all bedrooms en suite, because we had it built ourselves. And it's cheaper that way. I've just bought the land, and we had it built. We designed it. My wife designed what she wanted. She designed the kitchen and everything, and we had it built.
And you got all of that for, well, it's worth $180K now, so you got all of that really cheap.
Oh, it's very cheap.
Well,
if we bought the land off American,
mm-hmm.
who was selling it, I don't know, one day we're going to find dead bodies in the garden or not, I don't know. Because he wanted to sell up quick and everything, and we bought the land. And the people around us...
Hang on, what happened to him? Did he disappear after that?
He disappeared. We paid him, we went to the bank, we transferred the money and everything, mm-hmm. and he was gone.
Okay. Well, look,
yeah.
Since I think you're probably going to be all right, you know, if you notice any funny smells in any particular rooms, then start to worry. If
I
you
always
don't,
joke about it.
If you don't, then it's going to be all right. It'll be fine. So look, you're living there in Mexico.
Yes, we're living at a place called Puebla.
Oh, Puebla.
We're in between Mexico City and Veracruz.
You wonderful man. I know all about Puebla. And you know why? You will tell me why I know all about Puebla. What is Puebla? What's Puebla famous for?
Well, you got the volcano down the road.
Well, yeah. But what do they make in Puebla?
Pardon?
What do they make in Puebla?
Ceramics.
Uh-huh.
Oh, the Volkswagen.
Yeah, VW. I had a VW Beetle, the original type, that was made in Puebla.
It's now. No more Beetles.
Yep. And this was, you know, the new type Beetle that they brought in, I think, about 20 years ago. They've actually, I think it was this week, Graham, that they made the last one, or last week they made the last one of those in Puebla.
Because before I came over here, I was thinking about, if I could get my hands on a Beetle, I would like a Beetle when I was young. But when I came over here, nearly every taxi was a Beetle.
Mm.
And of course, then I thought, no, thank you.
Well, you know, it was such a common car there, and it's exactly like the one they made in Germany. But they kind of updated it, because the one that they made in Germany, I had one of those as well, had hit-and-miss brakes. So when you brake in one of the old ones from Germany, if it wasn't set up properly, you'd go off to the left or off to the right, and you'd have to try and compensate for which way it was going to veer, which was a little risky. So the one from Puebla, the newer ones made in Puebla, had the VW Golf braking system in them. and you would stop in a straight line. And they had a big 1600cc engine. The downside about the ones made in Puebla that they don't tell you, they just don't feel like a, they don't feel like a Beetle. They feel like a Golf.
I didn't like the new, the later model. I didn't like it at all. To me, they should never call it a Beetle. They should give it a different name.
Well, I have to say to anybody...
It's like the Mini. Why did they call that car now the Mini?
Because it's small.
But you got the four-door Mini and everything. They're not Minis, are they?
Well, I think the people who make them would say they probably are, but I understand what you're saying.
Yes, I guess I see those. But you still see a lot of the old Beetles, though. You still see them hopping around.
Oh, they're going to be, because they made those until about 2004, I think. They'll be running for years. But I always say to people... I always say to people, Graham, that if you want to experience proper driving, and I'm not talking about the soft wimps driving that most people have these days with the heated seats and the cruise control and all of that gubbins that you've got. If you want to experience proper driving, get your bum into an old Beetle and drive 200 miles. And it will take you about 15 minutes to get yourself out of the car because you'll ache so much. But you'll have felt the road.
Here, but I don't like driving over here.
Is it a bit hit and miss then?
Oh my God! In our state alone, there's nearly 3,000 deaths on the road. Just our state.
What? That's yearly.
Yearly.
3,000 people.
In just our state, and all Mexico is around about 20,000 a year. A population.
There's another one. I've just heard it.
About population of about 110 million. They've got about 20,000. I don't like drive. I only drive when I have to.
Well, I can understand. I mean, listen, with 3,000 deaths in your area every year, I will be staying in bed with my head under the pillow. he joked. Well, no, a great, amazing place to live. Do people where you live, do you speak Espanol?
Oh, yes.
Can you do a bit for me of Mexican Spanish? Come on, then. Not dos cervezas, por favor, because we know that.
Come esta.
Que hace ahorita? What's that then?
What are you doing now?
Oh, it's very good. Give me that again, will you?
Que hace ahorita?
Que hace? Have you stopped laughing? Que hace?
Más tarde, yo voy para el banco.
What's that?
Later, I'm going to the bank.
Okay.
That's my plan for this afternoon. Mm-hmm. Go to the bank.
And what would be, what's the Mexican Spanish for, where can I get something for my hemorrhoids?
Hemorrhoids.
Do they have a word for hemorrhoids there?
It's not a bloody word I would have learned, really.
Well, it's probably, you know, the Spanish word for irritation will be in there somewhere, I think.
Yes.
Well, that's your task now, Graham. Find out from your wife. Your wife is a doctor. She will know what the word for hemorrhoids is.
Yeah, if she's not here at the moment.
Okay. When she comes back, tell her Howard Hughes in London wants to know what the Spanish word for hemorrhoids is.
Just in case you go on holiday one day and need it.
It could be very, very useful.
Exactly.
Would be, Ed, yeah. It's not the sort of thing I've asked a doctor,
If you've ever been burdened with that issue, you will understand how important it is to know those words.
Prostate problems.
Oh, have you really? That's very... how are you? I mean, seriously, though, how are you with that?
I had a biopsy the year last November, and that was negative.
Oh, good.
But I had to get it every year, but I had more tests done 2 months ago, and my that special blood test they do...
PSA test.
Yeah, it's gone over the limit, so I've got to have more tests done, and he was talking about... You may have to do another biopsy. I said, thank you very much.
Oh, well, good luck with that. But, you know, sometimes these things are like a precaution. They have to do it, and it's better to have it checked out than to leave it.
That's right.
You know, what a lot of men do, and I have known some people, I've known people who've got this very young, you know, in their, in their 40s, and they've just ignored it.
About prostate cancer. Two of them had it, and they got treated with it, so they're okay, you see.
Well, listen, I'm sure you will be fine, but you're doing exactly the right thing by having it checked out. What's the health system like there in Mexico?
Well, it's now, because we got private insurance, so we're okay. But if you got no insurance, really, you could wait for really months. You could die of prostate cancer before even seeing you.
Oh, dear. And last question, Graham, and thank you very much for coming on to us tonight here. Donald Trump has a lot to say about Mexico. He says he's going to build a wall. I'm going to build a wall. It's going to be a big wall. Mexico's going to pay for it. What do people there think about that?
They talked to me about the wall, but I got one question for them. I said, if he builds the wall, will it affect you? And they say, no, it won't affect me. I said, no, because you go to United States holiday, you fly over. The wall's not going to stop you. The wall's not going to do anything. I said, if you want to build it, then build it. That's what I say. It's not going to affect me.
Now, Mr. Trump gives the impression that every other Mexican wants to live in America. Is he right?
No, he's not. A lot of them coming back. They've been coming back for the last about 4 years.
Right. Well, you see, this is stuff that we're not getting to hear in the press.
It's more coming back, what's going over.
And that's the word from Puebla. Whereabouts is Puebla? Puebla's in the middle, isn't it? Am I right about that? Yeah.
Yeah, so we're between Mexico City and Veracruz.
Hang on.
The state of Puebla.
I can hear bells. Hold on.
That's my clock.
Oh, right.
My grandfather clock.
Why does it go off at 22 the hour?
Yes, exactly. Thank you, Hayley.
No, it's 5 minutes fast.
So is it meant to go off at 2:30?
No, it's got to go off 2:45. My clock says 2:45.
Why would you have it go off at 2:45 the hour? I'm sorry, I'm really
intrigued
here. I was going to
say, where are you living, Trumpton? what's all this about?
Well, what's happened, you see, it's gone a little bit fast.
Yeah, well, it's gone significantly fast. Well, it depends on how you look at it. If it thinks it's 10 o'clock UK, then it's very fast. And if the clock thinks that it's 11 o'clock, then it's a bit slow.
Yes.
And what time is it in Puebla, by the way, at the moment? I should have asked this.
It's 20:05.
Okay. And what are you going to do?
20:11 in the UK.
As you can tell, there is a bit of delay in the signal here, but what are you going to do for the rest? What are you going to do for the rest of the day, Graham?
Right. I'll say, I'm going to the bank. I'm going to leave in about 30 minutes. Go to the bank, get some money. Then go down to the sports club. We meet my daughter.
Ooh.
We're members of the sports club. They've got two open-air swimming pools, one indoor swimming pool. You've got the tennis courts, restaurants, swaths, and all those. We're going to spend the evening down there, you see.
That sounds very civilised. You know, you could be just as well in Broadstairs. You know, it sounds just like being in Britain, doesn't it?
Well, it is. Well, because the only TV I watch, I watch United Kingdom, because I've set up my TV and everything, and I've got one of these VPNs.
Oh, you've got a virtual private network.
What's one of those?
It's a virtual private network.
all I do, you see, all my television comes from the UK.
Is that legal, Graham? Are you breaking the law?
Well, not really, because they can't do it to me. It's like my sister's got Sky.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So she's given me her password to Sky Go.
Okay. And your name was Graham. You're in Puebla.
Everything I need. I have my friends come round early this morning to watch the cricket. And that started at 4:30 in the morning.
Can I just say two things I want to say. Number one, you're a fantastic guy and it's lovely to talk to you. And number two, you have filled us in on so much that most of us would never have heard ever about living in Mexico. So thank you so much, Graham. And I hope this isn't the last time we speak.
No, well, but trouble is, though, you're for 4 o'clock Sunday afternoon for me.
I am. It's a good time to be.
It's family time. Uh-huh. But I normally listen to you on Listen Again on a Monday morning.
Well, a lot of people are doing that now because they keep emailing me and telling me that. That's my Unexplained programme, by the way. If you don't listen to the weekends on talk radio, then number one, you should be. And number two, my show's called The Unexplained. 10 p.m. in the UK, 4 o'clock in Wembley.
I'll have to phone you one Sunday because there's a lot of talk about UFOs round this way.
There are. And we could have a whole other hour conversation about UFOs. Yeah, well, we're going to do that. And thank you very much, Graham, for coping with it. I hope the biopsy goes wonderfully. I know it will. It'll be fine. And give my love to your lovely wife.
I will do. Okay, so thank you very much, Howard, phoning me.
Thank you.
And we speak again.
And hasta la vista, sweetheart.
Baby.
Thank you so much. That's Graham and his wife, who's not there at the moment, but is clearly a very big presence in his life. And what a top guy. Just imagine living in Mexico. But you can live much cheaper than here. The weather is really nice. And
It's a different world, isn't it?
It's a different way, exactly. You see, Hayley, you should be a news journalist. Because news journalism is all about summing up the thing. It's a different world. Hayley absolutely knocked it on the head there. This is Howard Hughes here, not on The Unexplained, a talk radio right across the UK. I'm in tonight and in tomorrow night, and then Ian Lee comes back from his Kiss concert, and he will be boring you about that for the next three nights starting Monday. He'll be telling you how great it was. They probably invited him on stage. I've been trying to find out if he actually got to introduce the band, because what's the point of being, you know, a celebrity, as he is, going to a concert and not getting to introduce them? Do you not think so? Hayley, you're saying very quiet, diplomatically.
I don't know.
Okay. I did introduce a band once, you know, I did. It was remember Top Loader, Dancing in the Moonlight?
Oh, yeah, I love that song.
I got to introduce, just once in my life, Top Loader at Wembley Arena.
Oh, wow.
And
did you say hello, Wembley?
I didn't, because the last five people before me had already said it. Oh. But I was standing in the middle of the arena, and I've got this mic in my hand, otherwise they wouldn't have been able to hear me. And I remember thinking, what am I going to say? So I just said, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Top Loader! Like that. It was like the man from The X Factor. Top Loader! Like that. And I thought, okay, this is going to go one of two ways. They're either going to love what I've just done, or they're going to start in absolute silence. And thankfully, I said, Top Loader! And they went... I'm thinking, thank God, I'll live to breathe another day. This is Howard Hughes, only on Talk Radio. Stand by for more where that came from.
Controversial conversation and outspoken opinions.
It's Howard Hughes
on Talk Radio.
We get it almost every night. When that moon is big and bright, it's a supernatural tonight. Everybody's dancing in the
ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Top Loader. I saw Top Loader's album in one of the charity shops the other day in Kingston. And I was thinking, well, because I introduced them playing that record or singing that song at the Wembley Arena 1,000 years ago, do you think that as a kind of loyalty to them, I should buy the CD? And I didn't buy it. It was £3.50, and I feel so guilty that tomorrow during the day, I might go back to the British Heart Foundation shop. Please don't go there and buy it before I do. That was Top Loader's...
told everyone now.
Well, exactly. Top Loader. I think it may not be too much of a secret that I used to work with Chris Tarrant, and he used to call them Front Loader. He used to say, oh, God, Howie, we know that you introduced Front Loader, for God's sake. I used to do a better impression than that, but that's neither here nor there. Now, we'd love to hear from you tonight, wherever you are, wherever you reside. If you're an unexplained listener and you've got any questions or experiences that you want to share with us, then please do that. It's 0344 499 1000. That's the phone number. If you're outside the UK, like Graham was in Pueblo, Mexico, then drop the zero at the beginning. 44 country code, 344-499-1000. If you want to text us, then you can text TALK, and then a space in your message to 87222. Start your text with the word TALK, of course, and text costs 25 pence plus your standard network rate. I went on holiday with my parents years ago. I'm sorry, too many stories. We went to Cornwall, and we're from Liverpool. My dad was very conscious of his accent. And my dad was a lovely man, very clever. He was a copper for years. And he was Liverpool's original good cop. Everybody loved him. But we went into a chip shop in New Quay. And there was a guy there. And it became a joke in the family for years. I wonder if this man is probably not even alive now, right? But he got a I've got a quartainer. He said, and he wasn't talking to us, but he was addressing the entire chip shop. And he said, I've got a quartainer, the windscreen's broken. He said, but it's all right, the ones for those, they're all standard. So it became a joke for him. Are they all standard then? Yeah, they're all standard for the quartainer. Apparently he had a Mark I quartainer with a standard windscreen.
Standard.
I don't know what part of Essex he was from, but we used to laugh about that. But then, you know, people who live in glass houses should not throw stones.
What was your first car?
Well, was a Beetle, 1972, called Taffy.
Oh, you gave it a name?
Taffy belonged to my sister, but you really want to know this story?
Why not? Go for it.
We've got people to satisfy here who are tweeting in, like Mark and David and CJ and Kyle and Joe, for starters. We're going to bore them, but I'll tell you the story.
No, you won't.
Since you asked. My wonderful sister, Beryl, okay, my big sister, my older sister, got a car after she got divorced in, I think, 1980, something like that, a long time ago, okay? She's a lot older than me. And she got, no, she's lovely.
She's going to love you for that.
Yes, I'm going to get another smack for that one. She found in Southport a VW Beetle 1300cc Marathon Edition with special wheels.
What was special about them?
They were a special moulding. They were not alloys, but they looked like alloys, okay? And anybody who knows Beetles knows that there were only 3,000 of these cars made, and they had these special caps. They looked like Coca-Cola tins, but shaped into the, like I'm talking like a little bully, but shaped into the form of VW on the, you know, the spindle of the wheel. They were great. And she took one look at this car and had to have it. Then she moved down to London, took it down to London. It went through all the winters there. She was using what they call public transport in London. So not driving the car because she was using public transport. And it went rusty and she didn't want it anymore. She got another littler car. Oh. And my dad said, we'll take that on and I'll teach Howard to drive in it. So we brought it home. It was rusty. And my dad and I, because we, you know, I don't come from, you know, exalted circumstances. We didn't have the money for a respray. So we bought about 5 cans of automotive blue paint and a few brushes.
Brilliant.
And we put it on the drive and we painted the car VW dark blue. I mean, if you could see this studio here, there's a blue line running around it. Same colors, like electric blue styly, like that. So we painted it. And I think we got more paint on the curbstones than we got on the car. And I drove that car for years.
Wow. How long did it keep going for?
When Taffy and I finally parted company, and I still have nightmares about it because I wanted to keep it in 1998.
I'm so sorry to hear that. I'm so sorry.
1998. Mm. And I wanted to keep her. And I couldn't because I couldn't run 2 cars. I had a Nissan Micra, which was my second car.
And what was that called?
No, that wasn't called anything.
Oh.
No. Well, it could
I'm
have been.
I'm disappointed now. It I thought you were going to call all your cars.
Well, no, it was registered in Portsmouth, where the registration is WCA. So right. I could have called it Wacker. As a Liverpool, you know,
oh,
Liverpool, you know, oh, right there, Wacker.
I'm like sure that. Other people got there first. I'm not sure that was the most original.
So. See, Graham was very happy with the conversation, by the way, because he's just said, enjoyable chat.
Oh.
He said, we'll speak another day. Please don't leave it too long, Graham. Thank you for that. Very much.
Send us a postcard.
Exactly.
That's what we need.
Send us the postcard because we need to hear from you.
Sorry. Wish you were here.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I don't even know whether we've got time now for the person we're going to speak with. Maybe we can we can leave him till after. Hayley's my producer, okay?
And you know, just not.
Yeah. Just thumbs up like that. Give me a thumbs up. Okay. So anyway, then I had the Nissan Micra and I drove that for years. And I came down to London with that.
Yeah.
And I ended up working at a radio station that doesn't exist anymore called Capital Radio with Chris Tarrant back in those days. And he was driving like, what did he have in those days? Probably a Merc.
I was going to say, he probably had a Porsche or something, didn't
Merc,
he?
A Merc and a four-wheel drive. And I had a Nissan Micra,
aww,
which he used to think was hysterically funny. And one day I was driving home and I stopped at the traffic lights near what is now, what's that big shopping center in Shepherd's Bush called?
Westfield.
It wasn't Westfield then, it was Waste Ground, but there were big traffic lights there. And I stopped there. And a guy from Evesham, I think he was, I can still see the name on the front of the truck, driving a load of concrete, right, is looking at a map in the days when there were no sat maps. This is like mid-90s.
Oh, wow.
And I'm thinking, he's going to hit me. I've stopped at the red light. He hasn't looked. And the next thing, I've got half a Nissan Micra and whiplash, which I had for about the next 6 months. And that Nissan Micra, the moral of the story, the point of the story is that the local garage didn't write the car off. The insurance company in the garage didn't write the Nissan Micra off. You wanted to hear these stories. They actually rebuilt it. They stretched it out. And half a car became one car again.
That must have cost a fortune.
It was on the insurance, wasn't it? Because the guy hit me.
Right.
It was pretty. Yeah, I can still hear that noise of that thing hitting. Because can you imagine, if you're going to hit by a truck, you do not want to be hit by a truck that's carrying a load of concrete.
No.
Ideally, you want a truck full of feathers, not concrete. So the noise of it was incredible. And the car was just concertina. It was half a car.
Gosh.
And I'm thinking, well, that car's never going to work again. That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
Bye-bye car. And they built, they, you know, resprayed it, stretched it out, and I drove it again for about another 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah. There's another car.
I've got a Micra, and that's 16 years old now. That's
If we were working elsewhere, like the BBC, etc., you'd have to say that, of course, other brands of vehicle are available. But I think people are grown up. They know about those things. So, You're listening to Howard Hughes. This is Talk Radio. I'm not... What time are we supposed to be finishing here? Just give me a little
it
idea.
It says it on your screen.
Doesn't it? No, it says 22:58.
Which is the time, apparently.
That's 20... Amy, that's 20... For those of us who have done radio elsewhere, that's 22:58. It's all right. I know now.
Oh, come on. Leave her alone.
No, you've got to get used to working with her. She's lovely. Aww. She's lovely. And now I want her on Sundays as well. Let's have her on The Unexplained. But I think she's only allowed to work at the weekends or the weekdays, whatever. So, right. This is Howard Hughes, normally of The Unexplained on Sunday here on Talk Radio. If you are one of the regular listeners to The Unexplained who emails me saying, Howard, I want to ask you a question, and here's the question. Here's your chance to phone us up and actually do it in person. And, you know, as best I'm equipped, which is not brilliantly, I will answer anything you want to know about me, stuff that I've done, things that we've talked about on that show, or if you want to talk about anything, our number here at Talk Radio right across the UK, around the world, is 0344-499-1000.
Controversial conversation and outspoken opinions.
It's Howard Hughes
on Talk Radio.
For those of you who thought Morton Harkett was a motorway service area, Talk Radio brings you Howard Hughes and my producer Hayley Hayes. Couldn't do it without her. Thank you very much to the anonymous person who said, I think they're probably addressing Mike Graham or somebody else, but they, some very nice things you said. Thank you for that. Your voice becomes you, young man. Is that a compliment? I think it is.
I think so.
Your voice becomes you. I don't know what it's becoming, but yeah, whatever. One thing I did want to talk about tonight, and I'll chuck it in, and if you think it's worth talking about, miracles, okay? I don't mind. I've got to a stage in my life now where I don't really care about talking about myself and stuff. You know, I think you have to, once you get north of 40, you know, nothing much matters.
You're comfortable in your own skin. I think that's what it is, isn't it?
Well, otherwise called you don't give a stuff.
Right? Yeah.
Because you've heard it all. People either like you or they don't like you. And what can you do about that at the end of the day? You know, if you're doing something that's really incredibly wrong, then you change it. If not, c'est la vie, as they say, and you just have to. Anyway, look, cut a long story short. I don't know, are we allowed to use the word, because it's late at night, that describes that's derived from the inventor of the flushing cistern? Can we use that word?
Yes.
Right, well, I've had a crap week.
Right.
And I don't mind admitting that I have had that kind of week.
Oh.
We'll just do it to
us. Well, you're here.
No, that is just a point. So I'm sitting in the car wash at Sainsbury's today, getting a number 3. Which is, what's that, the exquisite wash or whatever.
We were just talking about toilets and you just said number 3. I'm very confused right now.
No, that's a number 2.
Who is
number 1? So I was getting it all done and the car's rocking away there and I'm thinking, I hope it gets the wheels because, you know, the alloys get a bit filthy. And this is the first car with alloys that I've had since the Nissan Micra, which was more than 10. So I'm proud of me alloys, right? I'm probably getting nicked now. So I'm sitting there thinking, what a terrible week this has been. You know, letdowns by, you know, a few people close to me one way and another. And you think, well, I've got to ride it out, haven't I, really? And I just think to myself, okay, up there, if you really do exist and you care about me at all, make something nice happen. 10 minutes after that, I got a text asking me to do this. Now, I think, you know, being a radio person, that's a miracle for me. So, what I want to ask you, and it's normally the kind of question that we will ask on Sunday nights on Talk Radio on The Unexplained. What's the name of that program I do? The Unexplained. Do you believe in miracles? Being seriously now, and we're not talking about it from a religious, you know, throw away your stick, you are healed. Not that. But sometimes being in a situation where you want things to improve, right? And you kind of put it out there. There are those who say that if you put it out there honestly, and Hayley Hayes, you're looking at me like a woman who knows these things, which I know you do, but if you put it out there there are those who may contend in this world, to be fully compliant when we say this, there were those who may claim that you put it out there and sometimes you get an answer.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happened
today.
They
call it cosmic ordering, don't they?
Well, they did. Now, funny you should talk about
this. Funny you should say that.
Forever. It's like I've got... Remember those old Rolodex files?
Yes.
That you keep people's names and details in? It's almost like with my brain, you go... Oh, cosmic ordering service. Howard did an interview with that person in... I did. Birbal Mor. There was a book in 2006 and 2005. That set the world on fire. It was available. You'd go to any airport bookstore and you would see Birbal Mor's The Cosmic Ordering Service there. Because it was just the right kind of length and it was full of tales of people who said, I needed to change my life and I put it out there and it came to me. Mm. Which sometimes, you know, things do. I mean, it might just be nonsense. It might just be, you know, fate or whatever we call it. But people like Birbal Mor said that you could change your life that way. Now, sadly, I didn't know this. I did an interview with her in 2006, and she was the loveliest person with the sweetest German. I can't do it quite the German accent. It was so beautiful. It was like this, you know.
Brilliant.
You know, Howard Hughes. That's a very interesting name, that. You know, I can't. Look, I'm not even going to try, because that sounds like Pontypridd or something. But we did a lovely hour together, which I think was edition 2 of my podcast at theunexplained.tv. And I was told a couple of years later that she died, but she set the world on fire for years, and she's still missed by a lot of people, because some famous people swore by the book. There was Noel Edmonds got himself into the papers because Noel Edmonds purportedly, and Noel, if this isn't true, then correct me, but I believe that you used that book as well. So I got the book, and I think there might be something in it.
Have you read it?
Do I read anything? I'm one of these people who I'll read the first chapter and the last. And if I like both of them, then I'll do the bits in the middle. It's a attention span of a gnat.
Wow.
I can't concentrate on anything. What was your name?
Where are we?
One of the worst things about working at talk radio, and there's only one worst thing really, is that sometimes you can be sitting here, and certainly in the dead of night you can be sitting here, and you will do that thing that I've only done at one or two places in my entire professional career. You will forget that you're on the radio. And you will think that you are just having a conversation that's not, you know, being broadcast. So forgive me for that. I was going into that mode there. Cosmic Ordering Service, Birbal Mor. Check out edition 2 of my podcast of theunexplained.tv. But don't do it now. Otherwise, you're going to desert me in my moment of need here on this show. Lovely to know that so many people are there tonight. Literally, it's not like the weekend show. We can take this, can't we, Hayley, wherever we want to.
Yes, go.
Yes, go.
Let's go.
All right, I'm going to look through. What shall I do? I'm going to use the cosmic ordering service. I'm going to close my eyes here and say, let's talk to Rainbow George. Rainbow George, are you there, Chuck?
I am all here.
How are you, George? You and I have known each other for about 30 years, haven't we?
It's a long time.
It's a damn long time.
It's all sorts of synchronicity going on with your program. Do you live in Kingston?
Well, should we say that I live near Kingston? That's not Kingston on Hull, although that's very nice. It's Kingston upon, oh, darlings, it's Kingston upon Thames.
Do you know the stained glass studio there? Have you ever visited that?
Hey, there is a building there. I didn't know it was a studio, but isn't that the building that is near Hampton? I might have this completely wrong. Isn't there a building that's like a big posh house with a great big stained glass window that is a rock and roll studio? Is that the one you mean?
No, I don't think it is. It's in Hawks Road, Fairfield Corner.
Okay. I didn't know about that. What do they do there, then?
It's quite mystical. I would have thought you would have known about it. They produce art and stained glass and stuff. And, But I had aspirations to do a radio program once because the late comedian Peter Cook was my neighbour.
Your neighbour?
Yeah.
Wow. What was it like to live near that man? Because I love Peter Cook. He was a genius, absolute genius.
Yeah, no, he lived three doors away from me. And back in 1984, he created a notional party called the Watt Party,
The what the, party, yeah?
Yeah, the what party, its message was to give everybody what they want within reason. And he appointed me to be Minister for Confusion in the what party.
I dimly remember this. I do dimly remember this because Peter Cook was a big joker. And, you know, we won't name the radio station because they wouldn't name us. But there was a radio station around the London area in those days. And there was a guy doing overnights who's, you know, still a friend. And in the middle of the night, there'd be a guy phoning up calling himself Sven. You remember Sven, George?
Of course, Sven from Swiss Cottage.
Sven from Swiss Cottage who would phone up and he would say, he'd be talking about the fish and he'd talk about all the all the kinds of different kinds of fish and it would all be about fish. And one night, I was doing the news on that station back in those days. I'd only been in London for a year or so. And somebody said, you do know that that person who keeps phoning up called Sven talking about fish and, you know, haddock and turbot and all, that is Peter Cook. And he used to phone up and pretend to be Sven. And he never liked anybody to sort of out him on air and say, you're Peter Cook, really, aren't you? So nobody ever did. Great days, George.
Yes, I started my own party. That's why he made me Minister for Confusion. I started.
Are you still confused?
No. I started a party called Captain Rainbow's Universal Party. And Captain Rainbow is.
When was this? What year?
This was 1984.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes you about 30 years ahead of your time then.
Well, I was, 33 years old then? No, 34 years old.
What did just because there's a lot, and I don't want to talk about politics on this show tonight, because yes, I'm a news guy, but I have to tell you that like an awful lot of you listening to this right now, I am bored, witless with it. But what did your party stand for?
Captain Rainbow's Universal Party stood for the abolition of Parliament.
Oh, hey.
And for the people of Britain and Ireland to join together and become the Wise Islands, as in Wales, Ireland, Scotland, England, spells out Wise. And
well, you'd be getting a lot of people signing up for that. Did you stand for election at any time?
Lots of times.
Did you? This is a gap in my remembrance here. I didn't remember.
In 1984, I entered the political arena just after the Brighton bombing, and the MP for Enfield Southgate, Sir Anthony Berry, got killed in the bombing.
Yes,
so there was a by-election in Enfield Southgate, and I thought Captain Rainbow's Universal Party would sweep
good
the victory, and I got 48 votes.
Oh, did you lose your deposit? I think you probably did.
I always lost my deposit.
Listen, I've always sometimes when I get really peed off with the world and the way that it's run and the stupid people in it, right? I'm sorry. Calm down, Howie. But sometimes when I get really sick and tired of it, I sometimes think, well, I've done a bit of radio. And I've done a bit of news. I think I might well stand for, but God knows what party, though. Gee. I would like to stand for Parliament. When you do that, though, Hayley, I mean, just imagine that. How do you have to do that, then? Do you have to get, is it 10 people who have to band together and put your name forward?
You need
George?
Money. That's what you need.
Yeah. Well, in the first by-election, it was £150 to stand. And immediately after that first by-election, they put it up to £500 to stand as a candidate. And you need 10 signatures from people on the electoral register in the constituency to effectively give you permission to.
So you could literally canvass a few friends and they would make that happen for you?
Oh, yes. No, that was never the problem. It was the £500 that were the problem. But you're talking about miracles. 1976.
Yes, even I'd forgotten we were talking about miracles. Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah. So what happened in 1976 then?
I tried to end my life.
Oh, I'm sorry, George.
I swallowed quite a lot of pills and went to bed.
Thank God that didn't work then. You're here now with us.
Oh, no. Well, thank somebody. But to me, everything is pre-written. And I go along with Shakespeare, all the world's the stage and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances.
Yeah, I keep telling employers that, and they say, "Yeah, you can get off now."
And one man in his time plays many parts. His acts being seven ages. And
hey, Patrick Stewart.
And or is it Shakespeare? Isn't it?
Yes, very, very, darlings. Yes, it's very Shakespeare. I'm impressed by this. Are you reading this off something? Or are you remembering this?
No. I'm remembering it very clearly because I went through some very mystical experiences in 76.
Well, I think an awful lot of people did as well, George.
Well, I was made to suppose myself to be in telepathic communication with a friend of mine who had died a few years earlier.
And were you? Do you think?
Well, I was definitely in communication with some intelligence that either was pretending to be that person or was that person. I have no way of knowing. But his girlfriend had given me his King James Bible. I didn't know he even had a Bible.
Mm.
But things were happening in my life.
What, mystical things, like, you know, psychical things?
Yeah, I linked to a man called Ted Owens. You ever heard of a character called Ted Owens?
No. I was going to say, was he in the Ron Burgundy movie? But that's not him, is it, though?
No, I met him at a parapsychology conference at the City University, and he'd come over from America and claimed to be in contact with UFO intelligences.
Did he? Is he still alive? We need to get him on.
I was going to say, you need to book him.
No, if you sort of Google Ted Owens, the PK man.
PK is psychokinesis, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't that where you're supposed to be able to move things with the power of your mind?
That's
Uri
kinetics.
Geller? Oh, no, that's kinetics. Okay.
Well, Ted Owens could apparently get lightning to strike specific targets and do all sorts of things.
Do you think if I gave him a list of names, some of whom may be former employers, he could make that happen now?
No.
It's a joke.
No, but I say, if you Google Ted Owens, the PK man, a guy who met him at exactly the same moment that I met him, wrote this book about him, Ted Owens, the PK man.
Joking apart, that's a fantastic skill to have. If you can conjure up lightning, you just imagine that.
He could affect American football games and baseball games. He apparently could make things happen, and then he was right in what he was predicting about it.
Did you say he's not alive anymore?
He's not alive anymore.
Well, that's a shame, because I would have loved to have put him under the searing searchlight of my scrutiny on The Unexplained one Sunday night. Sadly, that opportunity is going to have to pass now, because he's passed. George,
back in 76, when I'd swallowed...
Oh, yeah. As you said.
A lot of pills, and I was 10,000 quid in debt, and had no way of paying off this debt, and I just didn't want to be.
So was he part of your miracle then, bringing us back to miracles?
Well, the phone rang, and it was the next morning, and I hadn't left this planet, and someone who had never called me. I was in the jewellery business. My dad.
Oh, you've told me that before. I remember that. Yeah.
My dad.
So literally, we're running out of time because we've got to get to commercials. Otherwise, they're going to fire me, and I'm only on one. So it'd be terrible if I was fired just doing one night. So listen, I'm glad things turned around, George. Nice to talk with you, and very interesting to hear about how you stood for Parliament and all of that stuff. I mean, seriously, there have been times, and especially recently, where I've just thought, but many times over the years, where I've just thought, you know, stuff the lot of them. You know, we need to get some common sense here. And there was a movie called, Hayley, did you ever see a movie called Network?
No, right, what's that one?
Movie, it's 1970s movie about, funnily enough, the character's called Howard.
Oh.
And he was a mad newscaster. Does that remind you of anybody?
They wrote it about you.
Played by a fantastic actor called Peter Finch, right? And Peter Finch had a complete wobbly on air and started to rant and rave. And they're in the control room. This is American competitive television, rather like radio is these days. And, you know, they're saying, we've got to take him off. And they're saying, no, this is fantastic. Leave him on. So this guy rants and turns himself into a prophet. Okay? And the news becomes like a church, a cathedral service every night. And Howard Beale was his name,
wow.
Not Ian Beale. Howard Beale was the name of the character. And he got all of America. And I just thought, that guy's so cool. One of these days, I'd love to do that. And
yeah.
Get everyone to lean out of the window and shout, literally the entire continental United States, shouting, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. I'm here for two nights. And if you fancy having a go, I wonder if I'm breaking any laws by doing that. But, you know, leaning out of the window on a summer night, if you want to do that with me at some point, if you've had it with all the nerks, as they used to say in Porridge, and all these people who claim to be politicians, and all the trash that is talked at us all the time, which is why we are not doing it tonight. Maybe we need to lean out of the building, and we can do it in this lovely, sublime place that we're in darling central London, and just shout, I'm as mad as hell. And I'm not going to take it anymore. And maybe some of those people just down the river from here might, if we do it loud enough and long enough, hear us. Sorry, I will promise you, I'm going to calm down. This is Howard Hughes. We are Talk Radio, the most unique radio station in the history of radio stations.
No nonsense discussion.
Howard Hughes
on Talk Radio.
All right, I've just done the radio equivalent of dad dancing, and I know it was silly, but I love Lizzo.
I should have caught that on camera, really. I wish I had.
If you haven't discovered Lizzo yet, and I'm talking to you here, I'm a man far older than I should be, and I heard her interviewed last week, and I thought she was a talent, but that woman has got depth that I didn't even know anything about. Do you know that she was a classically trained musician? Did you know that? Do you know that?
No.
Oh, well, there you go. Not many people know that.
I saw a Glastonbury set. That was really good. Did you?
No. Oh, I saw video, but I wasn't.
Oh.
Were you there?
No.
Okay.
I just saw the set on the TV. It's
okay.
Really good.
No, I wouldn't go to Glastonbury. Be up to my butt in mud. No way.
I couldn't do the toilet situation.
Oh, God, no, the smell.
No.
Oh, and the litter. No, we don't do that. But I saw the video. She was a classically trained, she calls it a flutist. I think people here would call it a flautist. And she made a big choice. This is true. There's National Public Radio in America did an interview with her last week. They have it's quite serious program called Fresh Air. It's really good. It's not as good as Talk Radio, but it's good. And she was on this last week, and she was talking about how she trained all of her, you know, formative years to be a flutist, and had a big choice to make. Do I go for rap or do I play the flute classically? And she could have done either.
Wow.
You see, you didn't know that.
She made the
you?
Right choice.
Aren't you glad you worked with me tonight?
I know. I've learned something. Thank you. It's been an education.
Roger, thank you very much for your thoughts. They are noted and appreciated. Amajok, thank you very much for getting in touch. And if you've been in touch, thank you very much for all of you. If you want to tweet us, lots of people doing that. You can get on the Twitter and you can tweet us at Talk Radio. Should we take some more calls now? Should we do that? What do you say? Who should we go for now? Let's talk with Angela in Leicester. Angela, how are you?
Hi, Howard. I've never spoke to you before. I'm fine. Hello,
okay.
Amy.
Hiya.
Are you an unexplained Hiya. Listener, or are you an Ian Lee listener?
I listen. I listen occasionally.
Okay. What's going on with you tonight, then, Angela?
Well, I was just listening to say why does certain things happen to people all the time.
Mm.
You know, the constant, what's the word?
What synchronicity, you mean, like?
Yeah, why does it always happen all the time for good people?
Why do bad things or good things happen to bad people, bad things happen to good people, that sort of stuff?
Yeah.
I think that is what you call one of the archetypal questions of life that we will probably only get the answer to when we are not living. If you're one of the people who think that there's something after this life, the better damn well had be, because it needs to be better than this one, then you'll know the answer to that question, I would say. Angela?
Well, I think, it started for me is when I had my head injury,
How did that happen? Were you in a car accident?
No, it was at one of these work. I was working for a company and I was doing well, and they could offer me a job. And I was gonna. I had a chance to go to engineering classes.
Okay.
I was taken after my dad, and things when I had that, they said I couldn't do it. I said they wouldn't let me do it. So, and then.
But you had an accident, did you, when you were training?
No, I did something else to support myself going to college.
Okay.
I was in my early 20s, about 84, I think it was, and I remember it's on my certificate. I think it went downhill from there.
Well, I'm sorry, but how are you now, tonight?
Okay.
Yeah?
I'm with my lovely partner. I've been together for 14 years. We've had ups and downs. And
well, not everybody does, though.
Everybody does.
Those who tell you they... My mother used to say, those who tell you they don't are liars, right?
Yeah. But I'm always out anyway, because I've got my groups of them and my question and that. I had to rehabilitate myself. I had to stay in hospital for 6 months in Warwick somewhere.
Oh, God, that must have been terrible.
Yeah, and then I said, because me and Dad used to talk about engineering brilliantly, and that's what I wanted to do.
And what, you're not doing that now then? You can't do that now?
I do it in my, creative stuff more than anything.
Okay, and what sort of, just quickly, what kind of creative stuff? Sorry, I made that sound like a political phone-in. Just quickly, what kind of creative stuff do you do, Angela?
I've just made myself a cardigan and I'm making myself a blanket.
Oh, that's fab. Well, listen, if you get the chance at any point to take a picture of the things that you've created, let's have a look, yeah?
I will, yeah, no worries. I've got Twitter anyway.
Okay, well, that's you one step ahead of me. I've had somebody ask me tonight, Howard, what is your Twitter handle? And I don't have one.
Make that the mission by the end of the week?
Really
we get you
awful.
On Twitter, I think.
Angela, I need to fix that. Listen, nice to hear from you. Give my love to Lester.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's Angela, who I think's doing all right, isn't she, by the sounds of it? Yeah, he's making cardies and stuff like that. That's a skill. I can't do that.
You know, nor can I, actually.
My Auntie Amy. You know, by the time I finish these shows, we'll be going through my entire Liverpool family, including there was Vinny the Stevedore, right? He said, Howard, people call me a docker. I am not a docker. I am a Stevedore, which is a posh word for docker. That was Vinny. Then there was my Uncle Steve, who went to sea and used to bring me toys back from New York. Howard... I told you, Dad, I've got a car for you from New York. Oh, thanks, Uncle Steve. Great, thank you very much. This is my life I'm talking about here. It's all being before I leave this planet. I want to unburden myself. Sorry if you're suffering. And my Auntie Amy, who used to knit all the time and make mince pies. She was very good at that, Auntie Amy. And she couldn't pronounce words. She heard a word in the news, if she heard a word in the news, there was a word in the news that she was fascinated by, because it was all in the, this was 20 years ago, and sadly she's not with us either now, but what an amazing person was Amy. She heard the word anorexia, but Amy could not say anorexia, so it was always nervonoxenia. She looks like she's suffering from nervonoxenia.
Wow.
And we knew what she meant, but we heard what she said. Which is an old Benny Hill song that is quite rude. And if you go to YouTube, it's not that rude, but you'll hear it. It includes lines like, she said, can you tell me where I can get felt? Oh, I heard what she said, but I know what she meant. Sorry, that's the lament. Should we get another call on before I ruin it all for myself? Let's talk with an old friend of the unexplained, Kyle in Rochdale. Kyle, how are you?
Hey, how you doing, Howard? How's Hayley?
Hiya.
Hayley's doing all right. Hayley's always doing all right. Hayley is the coolest dude in this building.
Boss, you've got to be, keep you in line.
Well, I know. I get a little, a little hyper at times, and I have to be held back for my own good purely.
No, because what you reminded me when you said, this is not what I rang about, but me nan, mm-hmm. used to have this thing of saying, I don't think I'm mocking her, no, I'm not mocking anyone, but she would, I remember her sitting down, we having a conversation with me once, and she, this is absolutely true, Rochdale girl, and she said, I have trouble with them people who can't spell, say things properly. I went, wait, what do you mean? She went, dyslistics. I was like, yeah, that's dyslexic, man.
Ironic.
I think we get where you're coming from. I was just thinking about Rochdale girl. Who was that singer who was very famous? The one who did Been Around the World and
Oh, that's
what's her name?
Was it O'Connor?
No. She was in the same era. She lived in a terraced house in Rochdale. She'd say, Been Around the World and
Lisa. Lisa Stansfield.
Lisa.
Does she still live in a terraced house in Rochdale?
This is absolutely true. She lives opposite my doctor's surgery.
You're kidding.
Really?
No, so, yeah.
Does she know you? Still,
no, I've seen her in the
Hello, Kyle.
You sort of smile, because, she's in there, most of that sounds really bad. She's in there quite a few nights when wearing on a Friday, so you just don't acknowledge her, because, everyone's got used to her.
I heard that from somebody. You're reminding me now. I heard that from somebody else, that she is the most down to earth star, the most down to earth people who's had hits all over the world that you would ever come across. And apparently, because she's so down to earth, people just treat her like part of the furniture now.
Yeah, she's one, but still got the accent, still got the proper, you know.
Because it was all kind of, it was a bit like that, wasn't it, And then she'd do the... A lot of singers are like this, though, aren't they, Kyle? I'm sorry, you probably phoned up to say something else, and I'm just gobbing off now. But a lot of singers are like this. You know, they'll be kind of, oh, how are you? All right, then, you know. And then they'll come out, and then they sing, and it's kind of... And then they go back, see, it's all like that, isn't it, don't you think so?
She's very, very northern. And
when
on the odd
occasion
I've heard from her. I'm just saying, but a proper Rochdale.
Rochdale girl.
Who's the other one who's from around here? Jane Horrocks.
Oh, I love Jane Horrocks. Did you see that movie, Little Voice?
Oh, I love that film.
Wow. Hayley, do you ever see Little Voice?
Yeah. Long time ago, mind.
When I watched that first, I didn't believe that she did all the voices of Judy Garland and all those people. Yeah. And she did.
Yeah, she's brilliant, because Michael Caine's in that as well, I think, isn't
I know, there's the song he sings at the end, and he sings It's Over, It's Over. Yeah. There's a rude version that I nearly accidentally played on the radio that includes a few words that you can't put on the radio, on the CD. So if you want to hear Michael Caine swearing, that is the album to do it on.
So I did notice in talking with you, Howard, that my voice reverted, so instead of saying, isn't he, I went, isn't he? He's in that, isn't he? Because that's what we say around here, isn't he? He's in that film, isn't he?
I've gotten this, because I grew up in the North West, and although Liverpool is like a separate country from the rest of the North West, Kyle, as you know, we turn on the telly, of course, and it was Granada in those days, and it was all kind of about, this fire at a mill in Rochdale, and 20 firefighters have gone to deal with it, and a number of people have been taken to hospital, some of them poorly.
I still live near Turner Brothers factory. That was always on the news back in the day, and our XMP we don't talk about, and, all those
things. Glad that place still exists. I thought they'd have knocked that down.
No, it's kind of ruins, but it's about two streets from my house. There you go, a little bit of trivia.
I've worked with an awful lot of people in the SAF, because, that's what I've had my being for the last quarter of a century or so. But I always say, if you haven't been north of Watford, and if you haven't experienced what it is like to be north of Watford, you have to. We did my Sunday show from Liverpool. And Liverpool really delivered for me a couple of weeks back. If you heard the show, Kyle.
I heard that, I can't work out first where it was coming from.
I can't go on about it too much, because people down here, they say, well, if you like it so much, then why don't you go back there, eh? And I said, well, I've been down here for years. How can I? So, Kyle, sorry, why did you call then 20 minutes ago?
No, that's all right. At the top of the hour, which I believe is a term, there was the news.
Well, there are those of us who say that. I try not to.
There was a thing about the Google Fine and listening in devices. So this is kind of unexplained. Well, it's kind of explained.
Well, it's the kind of stuff that I do with Fevzi Turkamp, the gadget detective, when we talk, and indeed, as you know, last Sunday we did Surveillance, and we talked very seriously about the iconic TV show The Prisoner that we might talk about again tomorrow
night. Well, you said who is number one, and I was going to say, well, I won't give a spoiler, but I thought we knew who number one was.
Well, there are those who say that look, if you never saw the iconic TV series The Prisoner, you need to go and see it. But if you did see it, you'll understand that this was Patrick McGoohan, famous Irish-American actor, who created a series about an agent for the Secret Services who wanted to resign. And they obviously, if you know stuff that's secret, the story goes, then the agencies are not going to let you go that easily, if it's them indeed who did this. They kidnapped him. They took him to a place called The Village, and everybody was numbered there. Everybody was constantly surveilled. You didn't have a private moment to yourself. And most importantly, you could not escape, because if you did escape, they'd send a dirty great white balloon after you to smother you and carry you back. And that place is Port Myrion. But, you know, 50 years ago when they made that series, if you read about it, nobody understood what it was about. They all said, Patrick McGoohan, fantastic actor, great director, he's overstepped it this time, because what the hell is that show about?
But it's very weird when you look now.
Now, isn't it? It's today.
It's all sort of come true, hasn't it? I was going to say, if you wanted, well, I can go and ring you back tomorrow about the Google thing, if you like, I don't mind.
Okay, if we want to have a chat tomorrow, then, you know, it's open house here.
It's all right, because I was just worried about the time, it's just about Google.
I'll give you my own phone, then come round for a cup of tea later.
I'll give you a ring back tomorrow, thank you.
Kyle, listen, thank you very much. And listen, thank you very much for all the support that you've given to The Unexplained, even since before it was on the radio, mate.
Oh, thank you. You're welcome. Anytime.
You know, there are. Thank you very much. That is Kyle in Rochdale. And the untold story, sounded like being around the world, the untold story is that Kyle is one of a group of about 20 people who helped me start The Unexplained Online. The Unexplained's been a podcast since 2006. And I knew nothing about anything like that. I had to teach myself, how do you record? How do you get stuff out to people? Is anybody going to listen? And I started that. And there were a few people who started to email me and say, I'm hearing you. That's the first thing you need to, if you do podcasts, and, you know, if you want to, don't just want to, go and do it. The technology to do it will cost you nothing these days. And, you know, if you email me through my website, I'll tell you how to do it. If you've got a certain amount of talent and something to say, you can do a podcast too. But anyway, that's by the by. Kyle was one of the people, about 20 of them, who supported me from the beginning. And then, of course, the story goes that after 10 years of doing it online, I got invited to do the show on talk radio, which makes The Unexplained with Howard Hughes, I think, the only show in UK radio up to that point to have gone from being a podcast into a radio show. And now it's both. Look at that. At theunexplained.tv. That's one plug. Sorry, boss. More calls, more of you, whatever you want to say. Nice to hear from you. And I'll also get to some of your tweets that I've missed in the last couple of minutes. Coming next, here on Talk Radio with Howard Hughes.
Controversial conversation and outspoken opinions.
It's Howard Hughes
on Talk Radio.
The Verve, not the car, the band.
Is that one of your karaoke songs? Because you knew all the words to that.
I do. It's sad. There are a few songs. Elton John, Philadelphia Freedom.
Right.
I can do that all night and all day. that one, The Verve,
yeah.
And a few others. I wouldn't even try Lizzo.
Oh, don't know the lyrics. I'd pay to see that, to be honest.
I don't think the lyrics matter. I think it's just...
Amy would pay to see it too.
Yeah, I think so. It's sad. I mean, it's sad really to see the degeneration of a man of my years who used to do serious news on the radio. And look what I've become. A rambling idiot. For the entertainment.
Oh,
no, it's all right. I'm just, this is good for me. It's called beating yourself up. Shane in Australia. How nice to hear from you. Apparently it's getting cold in Sydney. My friend John O'Coleman, who you will know, Shane, who's on the telly there, used to be on the radio and TV in the UK, known John O for years. He's been tweeting and Facebooking pictures for a couple of months now about how unseasonably warm it is in Sydney. And apparently it's turned cold now, Shane, but lovely to hear from you. If you're a long distance listener to us, then, you know, drop us a tweet on the Twitter at Talk Radio, or, you know, get in touch in our various ways. If you want to phone, you can, 0344-499-1000. Internationally, the way to do that is to drop the zero at the beginning of it. It then becomes 44 country code, 344-499-1000. And then we'll, you know, we'll put you on the radio. That's what we do. Hannah, thank you very much for what you said. Nat, nice to hear from you. You mentioned somebody that you spoke with on The Unexplained. I'm not sure I think it might have been Christian Dion back in the day, but try and remember who it was you spoke to. And Mark asked me a question, and I promise I'll answer it quickly. But Mark says, what's your favorite place in the world that you've ever been to? I had a period in my life, and it's not now, because, you know, money means I can't go anywhere, really. Well, no, I can have go to Wales. I went to Wales recently. But I had a period in my life when, for work, I traveled all over the world. I used to do 60,000 miles a year for work. And that was mostly with Chris Tarrant on the radio. We went to Monaco, we went to Maui, Hawaii, we went to South Africa, three places in Australia, including the Barrier Reef, and did radio shows from there. We did one from the Maldives where the technology didn't work. And so we literally only had a mobile phone connection for the first couple of days, which was a bit, in the end, we had to hire a satellite. Now, you know, in these days of internet communication, that's dead easy and really cheap. You hire a satellite and you are talking thousands of dollars. And because we couldn't get any communication back to London, I think nobody checked it, I don't think. And I think the government of the Maldives was said, oh, no, absolutely, you will be able to get a signal, no problem at all. Then we get there, we find we can't. We had to have a satellite shipped out to the Maldives, whatever the capital is there, Mahé. And that's how we did the show. Wow. But by the time we were on from Monday to Friday, by the time the satellite arrived on the freighter, whatever the plane was, it was Tuesday. So we missed a day or so. But anyway, yes, where's my favorite place in the world? Difficult, because I had the great experience. Look, I'm lucky. I know that. But I had the great experience of broadcasting from all of these places. The Maldives is lovely, but my favorite place of all time, and I've done a podcast about it very recently at theunexplained.tv, probably Maui, Hawaii. It's the greenest place in the world. It's full of lovely spiritual people, like people who've got sick and tired of the rat race in Los Angeles and just given it up. Yeah, wouldn't you like to do that? And just gone to this beautiful, beautiful place. And they've settled there. George Harrison went there. A guy I interviewed a few years ago, Mick Fleetwood from Fleetwood Mac, lives there. And, you know, a lot of stars live there. You know, cost to live there. You can't do it for $180,000.
Is that near where Lost was filmed?
I'm not sure.
That was Hawaii, so I'm not sure.
But they literally, you know, you can go on a plane. They took us on a plane trip. Sorry, I promise not to tell any more details because I'll save them for another show. But you can go on a plane trip over Hawaii and you can see the volcanic material, magma, whatever they call it, flowing up from the still erupting volcanic rocks there. And flowing into the ocean, into the deep blue Pacific Ocean, and making new land as you're looking at it. It's amazing to watch, but the stink of sulfur from that. I mean, you'd be losing your breakfast if you'd had your breakfast. But then, yeah, that's my favorite place to go, Mark, and thank you very much for asking that question. I'm not sure Haley will thank you for that as my producer, because it's just another excuse for me to ramble on. Let's get to another call then, shall we? Let's get to Nigel in Maidstone, who I haven't spoken with for, I think, about 6 months or so. So, Nigel in Maidstone, how are you?
Oh, hi, Howard. How are you?
I'm very good, Mark.
Did I speak to you at Christmas time, I thought?
Yeah, we spoke at Christmas, yeah.
And I told you about my mum, didn't I?
You did. Sadly,
my mum died on the 3rd of August last year.
Last year, I'm very sorry.
Yeah, It's hard to get through a day. Every day is quite hard to get through.
Well, look, you know, for all of us, and that goes for me too, your mum is often the most important person in your universe.
Well, she's at peace now, isn't she, really?
Well, I think that's the healthiest way to look at it. She's at peace.
What I hope
You wouldn't want her to be suffering, would you?
No, she was suffering with lots of a bad neck and giddiness, but the giddiness was the worst. I had to keep calling the ambulance out for when I was out. That's before she had the fall that took her into hospital.
Well, it's always that. But listen, most importantly, you know, because, you know, she is at peace now and she would want you to be as good as you can be. How are you, mate?
Well, I miss her so much. I miss her so deeply. I miss her so much at the moment. You know, it's just hard to think about already. Mm. I put a lot of photos onto my Facebook to show people, holiday photos and snaps of me and her. And she was a lovely looking lady. Mm. If you ever get time to see her on my YouTube.
Mm. And I think you were doing, and she supported you in this, didn't she? You do music, don't you?
Well, yes, I used to be a professional drummer for 30 years. Mum and Dad used to be my roadie and take me on gigs.
Aww.
So that was nice to have some support in the audience when I was drumming.
Well, you need that. You do. You need that. I remember when I did the school disco when I was 18 and we left the sixth form. Mm. I was the only one who could do a disco because I was the only one who had the equipment. And my dad took me to the school. But there is a story behind that. Because I got the days wrong. So I had a Saturday Night Fever suit and a stripy shirt, a Saturday Night Fever suit, and I thought I looked the coolest kid on the block. Unfortunately, the school caretaker, who was a man called Jock, who was Scottish, funnily enough, came out and he said, "Howard, you're looking very nice. The disco's tomorrow."
Oh, that's brilliant.
And my
first up and everything.
And my father said,
disappointed.
Well, only slightly, but not nearly as disappointed as my dad, who'd had to drive me all the way there.
To drive you a long way.
And we unpacked all of this gear, the speakers. Yeah. Anybody who was there at the time will remember this.
All right.
The speakers, the amplifier, all the stuff.
Did you have lights?
I don't think I had. I think I had something that was multicolored.
You know,
and my dad looked at me and he said the equivalent of, "You plonker, Rodney."
Oh, what a story, eh? What a story.
But listen, the best thing that you can do is to look after yourself, and you can only live one day at a time. That's all there is.
Yes, I believe.
And that goes for all of us.
Time.
You know?
I keep getting, Howard, I keep getting spiders come up through the kitchen sink.
I get that.
Yeah, it's on you. Is it the summer?
And the bath as well.
It is. Actually, that is something that I can ask you if you're listening to this. My flat at the moment, and I've got the humblest little flat that is in need of rapid and complete renovation. I mean, it's embarrassing now. But because it's been hot and humid lately, I am infested with, I've got spiders, I've got moths, I've got, and not just one or two, I have got multiples of them. So if you think you've had one, I've had five.
Well, I don't like, I've got some below my bed that I won't kill because I don't like killing spiders.
Well, no, I put a glass over them, Nigel, and I walk them outside.
Yeah.
The trouble is the little beggars come back in.
Well, I don't like to kill them. I'm not the sort of person who likes to kill insects. But what I rung up earlier to talk about, I rung up earlier and then rung back because I thought I wasn't going to get on the show, but because you've got so many people to talk to at the moment.
Oh, God, you said that.
You were talking about jingles.
Yes.
Talk about jingles.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I used to do lots of jingles for a radio station in Wales called the Red Dragon.
Oh, I remember them.
20 years ago, I think it's now Capital, isn't it?
Well, I think they probably closed as well, really. But I think Red Dragon was very good.
Yeah, and Charlotte Church sent me a personal video from the pub that she had, and Mum and Dad had that pub, you know, the pub in Cardiff at the time.
You know this because she sent you that thing. She is the most lovely, down-to-earth, normal person that you could ever meet.
Yeah, well, I used to speak to her mother, Maria, because I was into listening to the classical music at the time, and her mother used to tell me where the concerts were. One time I spoke to Charlotte's manager, Sarah, and she was on the aeroplane taking Charlotte to do the thing in America for September the 4th, July the 4th. Is it July? Yeah, July the 4th.
Yeah, 4th of July. 4th of July.
4th of July, this is the other way around. Anyway, so I was speaking to her manager, and she was flying to America on the plane because I had these telephone numbers. Anyway, so I was a big fan of Charlotte Church, but because she used to hear me on the station because it's in Cardiff,
mm-hmm.
of course, and that's why I got the CD. The man on the station was called Steve something. Did you ever know some of the DJs on that station, Steve something?
I think I probably knew the news people more because I was doing the London end of things and they were in Cardiff and Newport, I think, were the two places.
But I've got the letter in the drawer from the man who sent me the DVD from Charlotte, and she signed it as well. She signed it with an autograph.
I remember meeting her once, and she walked through the door, and she is beautiful. I mean, she is absolutely radiant and beautiful.
She had the TV show as well, didn't she, her own TV show?
Well, I mean, if you see her, you can understand why, but she was radiant, and she sat down in the studio, and I thought, you're a star. Mm. What am I going to say to a star like you? And it was just like talking to somebody, you know, I got Welsh ancestry, and she just started talking about, oh, isn't it warm today, and all that sort of
she's
stuff.
She's a good actress as well. She made a nice a good film, didn't she, I can't remember his name now. But she made one big feature film, didn't she? I think it was just the one, actually.
Oh, really?
Can you remember it?
No. Can we look that up? I've got a team of 30 people here researching. Can you hear that noise? Listen.
The motorbike.
That is the sound of keyboards clacking. I've only got to say it, and it's done by 29 of those 30 people. So we'll find out what that is.
It's called I'll Be There.
Be There, that's the one. Yeah, with the motorbike in it. She rode a scooter, that's right. She rode a scooter.
Charlotte Church was in a motorbike movie.
Well, she rode a 50cc scooter. It was a pink one, of course.
You sure this wasn't Ozzy Osbourne?
With a head crash helmet, but she was only 16 at the time film.
That would be the concert to end them all, wouldn't it? I'm Ozzy Osbourne here. And Charlotte Church. Yes. Listen, thank you very much. Nice to speak with you.
Are you going?
I've got to go because we've got to get to the news and all that stuff.
Jingle or anything?
I can't play any jingles right now, but I'll play my jingle after the news. Yeah. If you want to hear my Howard Hughes jingle, we'll play that after the news.
Another time, then, Howard.
All right, take care, Nigel. Please look after yourself and remember, one day at a time. You know, you read that in books for a reason, really. Loads of tweets. I'm going to get through some of your tweets probably after the news now because we're sidling through to the news here. But listen, it's not for me to enjoy. It's more for you to enjoy. But I'm really enjoying this.
Good.
You know, I'm remembering. You remember when Margaret Thatcher stood up in the Commons? She said, "I'm enjoying this. I've been enjoying this last couple of hours." It's very strange. You know, I don't get out much. Number here, if you want to call us, is. It's true, sad but true. 0344 499 1000 is our phone number. Internationally, if you like Shane in Australia, I'd love to hear from somebody international. It's not going to cost you very much at all because we'll call you right back. So drop the zero from the start of it. 44 344 499 1000, and we'll just shoot the breeze about what it's like with you, and we will pick up the call, so you won't have to pay for that. You want to text us, talk, and then a space in 87222, tweet on the Twitter. At Talk Radio.
No nonsense discussion.
Howard Hughes.
On Talk Radio.
In the midnight hour, this is Talk Radio with Howard Hughes, in for Ian Lee, who's at a concert, a gig, he's seeing Kiss tonight, somewhere in London, I'm not sure where. And we heard a story in the news, Hayley H, you missed this, because you were paying a call of nature, or doing whatever you were doing, about...
I was getting Amy a tea.
Have you ever been... Oh, isn't that life?
I didn't get you a tea, though, I'm sorry, because I only had time for one.
I exist on caffeine, you know me. There was a story in the news, you probably didn't hear it, about turbulence on a plane. Have you ever been on a plane that's been hit by bad turbulence?
Not bad turbulence. I've had a bit, and even that's a little bit scary.
Gee, I used to fly down to South Africa a lot. And in the middle, you get this thing called, and if there's anybody South African or African listening to this, you know about this. You get this thing called the intercontinental, convergence zone, where air from the northern hemisphere mingles with air from the southern hemisphere, and it gets choppy. Sometimes you can drop like 1,000 or 2,000 feet in that space of time.
Take your breath away, wouldn't
it? Well, it'd take more than your breath away. Take your dinner away with you. Pauline, thank you very much for your communication. Paul, Oak Island is a subject I need to get into on the podcast or on the radio show. You're right. Mal in Belfast doesn't think that our lives are predetermined. Thanks for a long text that I've just been reading, Mal, but thank you for that. And Lou, a Sunday night listener, who's decided to join us tonight. That's the spirit, we say here. That's the stuff to give the troops, darling. Hayley Hayes and Howard Hughes here, all the H's on Talk Radio. Let's get to another caller now, who's called 0344-499-1000. It's Andy. Actually, we've called him because he's been sending me emails to the Unexplained website, theunexplained.tv. He's got a story to tell, and I think it's a story that you need to hear tonight. So, Andy, how are you?
How you doing, Howard?
Nice to hear from you, Andy. Whereabouts? I think you're in the Midlands, aren't you?
I am, yeah, near a place called Toyso. It's not far, well, it's in between Banbury and Stratford-upon-Avon.
Oh, well, South Midlands, then. It's Oxfordshire.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, okay. And you said, and the thing that intrigued me, and the reason that you're on here tonight, is that you said that you'd had a lot of strange experiences, but I think there was one in particular involving you that you wanted to talk about. Am I right?
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
The thing is, I mean, I'm not paranormal or anything like that, you know. I'm pretty much like yourself. I'm very open-minded, you know, and just take it as it comes, really. But my first experience was I was 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel a bit silly talking about it, but, you know, but it was real, you know. You know, it was something I really did experience. And I was 8 years old. I woke up in the middle of the night, and I decided to go into my father's bedroom. And just climb into bed, you know, as you do when you're young, you know. And I lay down in his bed, and, I mean, it's all dark, but, you know, like how you can interpret things better, you know, as an adult, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, you can look back on things that happened when you were a kid and understand them better, I think is what we're saying, isn't it? Yeah.
Definitely, and it's one of these situations where, you know, I was fully awake. You know, there's no, you know, I wasn't asleep, and, you know, I've spoken to a few people, and they were saying, like, you know, it might be, you know, these things, what, sleep paralysis or something like that. But it
yeah, there's a posh word for that that I've forgotten, but yes, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I was fully awake, but anyway, I climbed into bed, and, you know, I couldn't get back to sleep. And, like I said, it was all dark, but we had, like, a street lamp, and it was just, like, peeping in through the window. And for some reason, I was just looking towards the door, and really, like, gradually, I noticed the handle being turned down really slowly.
So did it make a noise? Did it go?
No, I was just, like, fixated on this handle.
Okay.
And then the door started to open, you know, quite slowly. And then I started to see, like a head. I know it's really funny and really sounds silly, but yeah, I seen like a head, but it was like a black hairy monster thing, you know. And like I said, I know it sounds crazy, but you know, it was a real experience.
Well, you mean like a sort of hairy black monster that if you turned your back on it, it would devour you in half a second, kind of thing.
Well, to be honest with you, do you know what it was? It was a few years later. I was going through some old books of my father's,
mm-hmm.
and
it's Bigfoot.
Yeah, I was thinking that because I come across this. I didn't know at the time, but it was the Patterson-Gimlin. Bigfoot.
The famous 1967 film that people say is supposed to be the real deal.
That's right, yeah, it was the face, it was that head, you know, and it looked towards me, and obviously, you know, as a child I was absolutely petrified, so I gradually, like, you know, sneaked under the covers, you know, and it must have probably been about half a minute or something, I peered above the blanket, and it was still there. But it was just like looking at me, you know, it wasn't, you know, doing anything else. It's just looking, just staring. And then it gradually started to pull its head out of the door. The door was being pulled to, and I seen the handle go back up. And, you know, that was a very real experience. I know you can say, look, you know, you're a kid, you know, you're probably dreaming, just woke up and stuff. But, you know, it's something that, you know, I've carried, you know, for 30-odd years. And, you know, it was a real encounter. It's something real that I experienced.
Well, but, you know, looking at it with the... It's probably more frightening when you think about it with the experience and the, you know, the tenor or whatever. I'm looking for a word here. I can't think of it. But, you know, looking back at it as an adult, it's probably more frightening than when you're experiencing it as a kid, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. No, I don't see it that way. I just found at the time, being a child, it was just, I was literally absolutely petrified, you know, and like I said, you know, it's something I've carried all these years, and, you know, I don't mind, you know, telling friends and family and stuff and whatever.
Have you ever tried to get anybody to, you know, to explain it to you, to talk it round with you?
No, I mean, well, saying that, tell a lie, I've had a few people saying to me, you know, it could have been something paranormal or something like that, but I don't know. All I know is that, you know, it was real. It was something I did experience. It wasn't like I said, it wasn't because I just woke up last night. I was probably awake for about 10, 15 minutes.
But you say that it was aware of you. I mean, that's a very important thing. Yes. In all paranormal experiences of this kind, there are those things that appear almost like a photograph in front of you. And there are other things that appear to be aware of you. Now, they're different.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, this wasn't like a photo. This was real. This was like a fully 3D thing, you know? It's real, you know?
Did you tell your dad about this?
Do you know what? I don't think I did, no. I don't think I told. No. No, I think it was just later on when I noticed this photo in a book, I actually mentioned it. You know, and it was just taken with a pinch of salt, you know, it was just a, you know, just a young kid, you know.
Sometimes things happen to us when we're kids. I mean, a couple of things happened to me when I was a kid, which is why I'm taking you very seriously, Andy. My grandmother took me to Southport, and I probably told this story on the radio show once or twice before, but I swear this is true, and it would probably have been in the 70s, and I was about 10 or 11. My grandmother used to always take me to the fair in Southport. And, you know, Liverpool had a great railway, still has a great railway service. So they call it the Northern Line today. It goes from Southport all the way down into Liverpool. And we got off and we went to the fair. We had a wonderful time. And then with thousands of other people who'd had a great summer day, all doing the same thing. They'd all been on the, you know, on the roundabouts, and they'd been, you know, shooting their rifles and doing all the other stuff you did at the fair, being on the Dodgem cars. So we're all processing back to the train station, and there is a man in front of us on a hot summer day wearing a long overcoat. And I look down, just as my grandmother's saying, don't look. Now, if you're 10 and somebody says, don't look, what do you do? Andy, what do you do? You look. Right? So I looked. And to this day, and this is an absolute, I swear this is a true story, and, you know, I knew what I saw. I may have only been 10 or 11. The guy had the feet and the legs of something like a deer. He did not have human legs and feet. He was like some kind of hybrid. I've never understood it. I don't know what it was. And it was one of the most bizarre things I've ever experienced in my life.
Wow.
And my grandmother maybe had seen this man around before, but she said, don't look. But I looked. And, you know, I got an experience. I still don't know what that is. So when you're a kid, these things make an impact. Because you can't rationalise them as you can as an adult, I think.
It really does. I mean, obviously, you know, what's happened to you, your experience, you know, it's ingrained in you. You know, it's not something, you know, you live your life by, but it's something that, you know, you know it was real. You know what you saw.
Mm.
And it's something that, you know, you swear by, you know. So I'm with you on that. I get that.
And, you know, you people might think, oh, well, he's, you know, he must have been a troubled child or something. But, I know what I saw at about 17 in my parents' house. And I've told this story before as well. I remember looking at the door frame, and I've read in more recent years, thousands of people have had this same experience. But I saw, now people are going to think I'm completely nuts, but I don't care. That's one of the great things about being this age. I do not give a stuff. I saw what appeared to be an alien skeletal form at the door, and when it realized I'd seen it, it quickly pulled back from the door. It had a long head, it had long, thin, spindly figures, just like the ET videos that you might have seen in pictures in comics. It's just like that, very thin and spindly. It was in the doorway of my bedroom at my parents' house, and it realized I'd seen it, and it pretty quickly pulled back. What was that?
That's fantastic.
Well, you know, so we've all had the experiences, Andy.
That's brilliant. That's really... I mean, I've heard you say a couple of things on The Unexplained, but I'm not too sure if it was that one with the feet, with the high bed.
Well, it's strange, because ordinary people, if you talk to them, a lot of them will say, oh, no, these things don't happen. And then if you probe them a bit and you ask them a few questions, they'll suddenly say, oh, hang on, when I was five, so-and-so happened. I think these experiences are more common than people say they are. And I am not an easily deluded fool. You know, I'm not somebody who believes everything. Yeah. People think that I do the unexplained and I put people on and I believe every word that they say. And believe me, I do not.
Like with your show, I mean, the first time I listened to your show, I just thought it was really, you know, it was fantastic because, you know, you interview, you know, your guests thoroughly, but you don't make judgment. You don't, you know, everything's open-minded, everything's...
Mm.
No, and you just make...
I try to. You know, I'm not God's gift to it all. But you listen to some of the shows in America, Andy, which if you have, you'll know that they tend to say, and we've got Shane online now, and he's been a paranormal investigator for 40 years now. And Shane, tell us about that amazing creature with three heads that you saw. Wow, that must have been amazing. I don't do that. Yeah. I say, what do you think you saw, for starters? Otherwise, you don't have any credibility, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, Howard, I don't know about yourself, but I think, like, you know, even though with my experiences, it's not a case of being sceptical of everything and dismissing everything, but I tend to listen with a very open mind. And, okay, there are some things, you know, I don't think, you know, is real, but, you know, at the end of the day, I don't know. It's just my
opinion. Hey, well, listen, Andy, I've got to go, but, you know, it's food for thought, and I think you're doing exactly the right thing. If you're looking into all of these things personally, and it's only a personal view, it's not the view of anybody else here on the radio station, it's my view. My view is that there is more in heaven and earth than we see.
Exactly.
But that's only a view. I could be wrong. I'm willing to be persuaded either way. But anyway, we're going down the rabbit hole of the unexplained here, so gotta go. We're going to do more of that on Sunday night. And Andy, thank you very much.
Would it be possible to speak again?
Of course it would. Yeah. Yeah. No, well, listen, it's open house here. Call us up and we'll... call us up, we'll put you on. See, no fee intended. And no fee levied, apart from the phone call, of course. It's 03444991000, by the way. Hayley Hayes, you're quite into all of this stuff.
Yeah, I am.
You're very quiet about it. But have you ever seen anything, experienced anything weird? Apart from
I've heard stuff. I haven't seen anything.
Right,
so I've not been, which is quite good, actually, because, like, when Andy was talking about seeing stuff, it scared the life out of me. Just imagine it. You know, you just imagination goes wild, doesn't it? Like, visually, when you kind of can imagine it. And, yeah, that's scary. But I've heard stuff. But then I always think, oh, was I just making it up? Was I just tired? Was I just... And that's where
you're
trying
to rationalise it then.
It's the thing, isn't it?
You
always do, though.
You
always do. But then that kind of then blocks it, doesn't it? Do you know what I mean? Because then you kind of stop yourself from actually thinking, has it got a meaning? Is it trying to tell me something? Because you kind of stop yourself from going down there, which is a bit of a shame, really.
I think a lot of it depends on your mindset. And there are a lot of people who have very fixed mindsets that say, no, all that I see is all that there is. And when I die, when I turn my toes up, that's the end of it. It's oblivion. I have friends who believe that. Some people don't believe that. I personally don't. I don't think that this life is all there is. Because we're only here for what did the Beatles sing? Life is very short and there's no time for fussing and fighting. Life is very short. You know, when you get north of 40, you start thinking, gee whiz, what did I come here for? I'm halfway through this thing now. So there must be more, I would have thought.
Well, you'd hope so, wouldn't you? But even so, I think it's such a shame when we stop ourselves before we even get to that point of, is it true? Is it? I just think there's always stuff you can learn. Even if you don't believe in it, you can still learn something, right?
But I think the problem is, and just to wrap this bit up before we take some commercials, is that there are some people in the whole field who are well-meaning but probably deluded. They've convinced themselves that, you know, they might be able to talk with spirits or that Bigfoot exists or whatever. The best people are the ones who are open-minded and look at it like you do,
yeah,
from every point of view, and you say, well, on balance, I mean, I had an experience. It sounds like I'm having experiences all the time, but really it's not so, sadly, because I'd be writing about them and publishing a book.
Oh, please.
But I was driving to work last Saturday morning, and it was about, I was early. It was one of those summer mornings where everybody seemed to get up early, and they were all on the M4. You know, going wherever it was at 4:30 last Saturday. So I'm there, and I've been on this trip, you know, 1,000,000,000 times on a Saturday morning. And I almost, you know, I know every brick, I know every piece of tarmac, every leaf on that road. And it drives me nuts half the time. But I get to Heathrow Airport, and that's the bit where I join the M4, and then I speed out to Reading. And it's 4:30 in the morning. So I'm making the turn once again at these traffic lights that change ridiculous. I mean, they are the fastest changing traffic lights near Heathrow, if you know these, in the world, I think. Because you literally, you've got 2 seconds to get across.
It's crazy.
Then you go up the slip road towards the M4, and then you're on the motorway. So I'm halfway up the slip road thinking, oh, well, here we go, another day, it's 4:30. Something shoots in front of the car. It is, and I saw it for about 2 seconds, but I saw it for long enough to know what I saw. It was too short to be a deer. It couldn't have been a deer because a deer, even a young one, is taller than that. So very squat, very muscular legs, front and back, which is not a deer. You know, deer's got muscular haunches, front not so. This thing was like a coffee table. It's built like a coffee table, big one. And this thing shoots at lightning speed across in front of the car. It's got a head that is like, remember, this thing is long, so it's not a dog. The head is a bit like one of those, what do they call those things, Rottweiler-styling heads. So quite square. Not as square as a Rottweiler. Rottweiler. Not as square as a Rottweiler. There was a time when Rottweilers were in the news all the time. We used to say Rottweilers. It had a head like a Rottweiler, but longer. I've no idea what it was. Somebody said it was a muntjac deer. I don't think it was, because I looked at a picture of one of those. It's not what I saw. This was like a fast-moving, thin coffee table with thick legs that darted across the motorway.
And it wasn't a coffee table.
Well, of course, I was just going to say, of course, it might well have been a fast-moving coffee table that somebody hurled across the motorway in front of me. And on that intellectual thought, we'll leave you for a moment and take more calls here at Talk Radio with Howard Hughes and Hayley Hayes. Stay where you is.
No nonsense, no prisoners, no substitutes.
Howard Hughes on Talk Radio.
And she's hooked to the silver screen. But the film is a sad thing for. But she's lived it 10 times or more. She could spit in the eyes of fools if they ask her to focus on sailors fighting in the dance hall. Is there life on Mars?
Is there life on Sutton Coldfield? In Sutton Coldfield. We'll find out here on Talk Radio with myself, Howard Hughes. Really enjoying this. Going to be talking very soon to John, Dave and Paul. If you'd like to join in, there will be time for you if we're sharpish. And that depends on me moving my mouth a little faster. It's 0344-499-1000. Let's start it off in Sunderland, a place I visited once and really, really liked. Dave is there. Hello, Dave.
Hi.
What do you want to say, Dave?
I'd like to say I believe in life after death because I've had a few experiences, like, to be honest.
Okay. Like what?
I used to be a security guard. And there was this hospital I was looking after when I first started doing security.
Uh-huh.
That was a Royal Infirmary. And my first night was quiet because it was a bed for to go to sleep on and everything. But my second night, the guard what trained up the first night, he said, you've got to go near the morgue to check it out a couple of times. And I said, I'm going nowhere near it.
Were there bodies in it?
No bodies in it, no.
Okay. But you know, nevertheless, it's still a bit scary. I wouldn't go there on my own.
I said, I'm not going there. And my second night I was on, I did go into the tunnels a bit and I nearly got lost and that. And I'd been asleep a bit, then I woke up about 11 o'clock, I heard a gang of voices in the building. I'd already done a couple of patrols during the night, and I thought it smelled perfume in the nurse's quarters and that. And it sounded like a gang of voices in the building and that, so I called the night shift manager out in the place, and I searched the building, and there was nobody there.
And how long had that place been, like, disused?
Years and years. Quite a few.
So what do you think you experienced, Dave?
I think it was definitely spirits of some kind.
Were you scared?
I was, yeah.
I don't blame you, I'd have been too, if I was on my own.
To be honest, the bloke, the night shift manager, said, just stop in the office the rest of the night.
Mm.
And I was making my way back to the office when I opened this cupboard door.
Mm.
And the security guard had dressed his dummy up as in, like, something.
Okay.
And I picked up the bits.
And, so, the rest so of the night, somebody, had somebody done that to scare you?
No, they just, they must have done it for a joke at some point.
Okay.
It did scare us all. Oh, and the rest of the night, I just put loads of chairs in front of the door and couches and barricaded myself in the room.
God. Did you go back?
I did, yeah.
Were you less scared the second time?
No, I wasn't. Okay. I've done a few different places like that, though. I mean, 2008, I was doing another place. It was like a nursing home. It had been shut down quite a few years, and all the papers were still there. But out my door, it was like a passage, and there was hardly any lights on, just a... dull lights in the passageway, and I had a glass door in my office, and I used to look out sometimes out the corner of my eye, and used to see these black shapes going past all the time.
Black shapes? What, like shadows?
Yeah, like a person and that.
But there were no people around, though?
Nah, no people around. And I used to just pull my blind down to, so I couldn't see it.
Because, you know, look, I had a Liverpool grandmother who I quote on this show a lot, maybe too much, but she always used to say, it's not the dead that are going to hurt you, it's the living. You know, do you no need to be afraid of the dead? That's easy to say, you know, but you probably feel differently about those words if you are stuck on your own in a building that you think is seriously haunted.
To be honest, I nearly quit the job through it.
I don't blame you.
There was another site I was on. It was another nursing home. And that was really creepy as well. I used to doze off to sleep sometimes in the chair, and every time you dozed off, you used to hear, like, somebody knocking at the door and that, so I didn't dare go to sleep on that job. So I've had a few different experiences.
So are you in a different line of work then now, Dave?
I am, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at the moment, I'm not working. I'm looking for a job, and it's hard to get one at the moment.
Do you want to do security again?
I do, yeah.
Okay, well, if anybody, wants, I can put them in touch with you. Dave sounds like a top guy. He's not afraid of ghosts, are you?
No.
There you go. See, Ghostbusters, I'm afraid of no ghosts. We'll take your number. Amy, can we take Dave's number? And if you have a job that you might potentially want to give to Dave, he's very good at security. You've just heard he's not afraid of anything. Maybe we can help him there. And Dave in Sunderland, thank you for that. Let's crack on then. Got to get through the calls. Here's Paul. Hello, Paul. Where are you?
Hello,
Paul. Where are you?
Yeah. Hello. At this very moment.
At this moment.
I'm under attack from somebody else.
You're under attack.
Yes.
Do you mean like a psychic attack?
Yeah. Do you think somebody's trying to spiritually affect you?
Yeah. You know it's possible to leave your physical body.
Well, there are people who say you can. I don't know whether you can. I never have. Sometimes I wish I could.
Yeah, I have before, but tend not to.
Mm-hmm.
And other people can do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those people, I'm not sure which one it is, is doing it to me now.
Okay. Now, look, I can't advise you on anything like that, because that's not my job, and I'd be in trouble if I did. But the only thing I could say, just as a sensible, well, how sensible am I? Who knows? But as a human being, you know, things like that can only affect you if you believe they can.
Right.
And if you don't believe they can, then nothing like that can hurt you. You know?
Yeah. I know that argument. But the sensation of it, if they obtain the same shape as your body, they move into your body, and then attack, say, increase your heart rate to the point where you feel that it's about to burst, but I feel...
I mean, I hear what you say. I do. Yeah. I hear, and I totally understand what you say. But some of that could be, you know, you just may be stressed out. Because if you think somebody's having a go at you, whether they are or whether they're not, that's going to increase your heart rate. That's going to make you feel really jumpy.
Mm.
So do you think there might be a bit of that going on, Paul?
Well, no, I was just trying to get to sleep. You know, I'm listening to the radio. I can feel the energy in my forehead at the moment.
Okay, can I give you a bit of advice as a friend, okay, and you can tell me to go away. But I don't want to think of you suffering. So go and see a doctor, eh? And just tell them about this, because there might be a physical cause for these things. And, you know, we can't do medical diagnoses here, because that's not, you know, I'm not qualified. We don't know, and we're not allowed to. But I would do that if I were you, Paul. Whereabouts are you? What part of the country? You don't have to tell me exactly the town.
Leicester.
You're in Leicester. Well, there are going to be lots of people there who I think you should tell the story to, and I think some of those could help. But first, Paul, to call if you've got a nice family doctor. Chat it round with them first, okay? Because, you know, the chances are that you are not under psychic attack. But if you believe you are, and if somebody's encouraged you to think that you are, then that's a problem. And if somebody's encouraged you to think that you are, then, you know, they are reprehensible people. You know, that's a $50 word, but they are reprehensible people, and you should have no truck with them. Once again, quoting my wonderful Liverpool grandmother. Thank you very much for that, Paul. If you want to get on here, then we're trying to get in touch with John. John, I think there's a fault on your line, but we're still trying to get hold of you, and we'll put you on if we can. And if you want to get in touch with us, come on here and have a chat, then it's 0344-499-1000. Here at Talk Radio with myself, Howard Hughes. And also check out my website, theunexplained.tv. If there's a way that you need to communicate with me, best way to do it is to go to my website, follow the link from there, and I will always see emails that people send to me. And I try and reply to as many as I can or talk about them on the radio. But I tend not to see the emails until after the show. So that's you might be thinking, and I know some people do and have, I sent Howard an email through his website during his show, and he didn't mention it. It's just because I tend not to see them till I get home. I tend to get home from the Sunday show. Being rather sad, you're still kind of high on the thing. You know how that feels,
yeah,
Hayley?
Yeah.
You know, you're still kind of, you're producing the thing. So you're the same. It's the adrenaline's going.
Oh, for sure.
So you get home at 2 o'clock. You can't sleep. So you have a cup of soup or, you know, tonight I've got a little airline-style bottle of wine, little one.
Oh, cute.
Pinot Grigio, Sainsbury's, very, very nice.
Please tell me you don't have that in the Uber home.
It's very nice.
You don't have that in the Uber home.
No!
I was just a little bit worried there.
I'm not, excuse me.
I mean, not
me.
Judging you. I mean, if you want to do that, that's cool, but I
no,
just like, okay.
Do I look like the kind of person who would sit there knocking, you know, rather than talking to the driver, knocking back a bottle of wine?
I don't know. I'm not, like I said, I'm not judging. I was just asking a question for clarification.
Are you basing that on experience with my colleagues here?
No. Not this station.
Let me disabuse you of that notion immediately. No, it's in the fridge at the moment.
Oh, okay. I just thought you meant you had it in your bag and you were ready to partake in the taxi home.
No. Yeah. See that hand there? How steady is that
Very
hand?
Steady.
Thank you. Tell me if I'm wrong, but I don't think one little bottle of Pinot Grigio in my fridge at home. Why am I just in famous? Is a problem really late at night?
No, it's not a problem.
After the show.
No, oh, no, it's not. It would have been a problem in an Uber, I think.
Well, yes, I think so.
Well, I don't know.
I thought really? There were laws against that kind of thing, sitting there
no.
in the back of the car, knocking it back
so.
Like a good one. Excuse me. No.
I think that's perfectly fine, actually.
Well, I think so.
Yeah. And get some cheese with it as well. Now you're talking.
I've got a bit of red Leicester.
Oh,
red
it's
Leicester.
A picnic coming on.
Well, a bit red Leicester. I've got another one of my relatives used to call the salad. I've got a salad.
What's a salad?
Well, it's like a salad, but it's a salad.
With an I in it instead of an A.
Yeah, that's how he's going to have a salad.
Right, okay.
And I do like when you have salad.
Yes,
if you do indeed have salad, and I try and eat some of those things. You know, I don't entirely live on ready meals, but mostly on ready meals. Do you embellish the salad? Do you put olives and stuff with it?
Oh, I love an olive.
Oh,
but green
God.
Ones, the red ones are evil.
I don't know, I've just bought I bought a concoction of olives. What do they call it? A combination of olives.
Yes.
And they're pitted. And, you know,
oh, yeah, of course. No one wants the stones. Well, no. They just get in the way.
Well, they break your teeth, for starters. But this particular concoction of olives is... they've got, some of them have got pimentos in them and they're green, and some of them are just black olives and beautiful.
I don't like black olives.
You don't like those?
No.
Oh, no, I like them all.
I don't think they taste of anything.
Bring them on. They're, not Woolies, Marxies. Marxies used to do really big green olives stuffed with, tomato.
That sounds nice.
Stuffed with sun-dried tomato. They were not cheap. God, they were, and here's another phrase from my Liverpool days. God, they were Moorish.
Moorish.
God, I love them. They're really Moorish, you know. Oh, David, thank you very much for your text, David. That's very kind of you to say so. Yes, I'm a little more grown up than I think I need to be, really. I wish I could be 10 years younger, but sadly, we don't do time travel. We tried to. That's a subject, going off at a tangent completely, that we need to be getting on the unexplained, Hayley. I don't know why I'm looking at you.
Time travel.
You don't produce it these days, but time travel is a great topic, but it's so hard to get people to talk, you know, authoritatively, you know, with conviction about time travel, authoritatively. You know, we need to get somebody on about that. Years ago, on The Unexplained, I had Al Bielek, who was a guy who'd been through a thing called the Philadelphia Experiment. Have you heard of that?
No.
But I made a movie about the Philadelphia Experiment. It was a military experiment, I think, in the 40s, and the American military was trying to find a technology using electromagnetism to make a battleship invisible, literally, so it can't be seen by the enemy. Hmm. What they did, it is claimed, is catapult these people on this ship through time, radically forward. And Al Bielek told a story, and he told it with total, he's dead now, sadly, but he told it with total conviction, how he was thrust forward substantially into the future. And from the 40s, he ended up in a hospital room where he saw a television with color TV and commercials on it and stuff.
Gosh.
So, and there are, it's still said that that technology that was developed in the 40s is still being used by some clandestine arbiters of the American government.
Fascinating.
Gobsmacked, aren't you,
eh? What do I say to that?
Well, there are many things
to do. How do we get from olives to time travelling, by the way?
Well, I think the greatest combination of all, of course, would be time travelling olives. If you could do an experiment whereby you got a jar of olives and you put them in whatever machine you've got.
Right.
And there are people who say that they built time travelling machines, and you catapult your olives forward or back in time. What do you think?
I don't know.
The greatest thing about time travel is, if there are time travellers, where are they? That's
they're
a point,
traveling.
Isn't it? Yeah, but we said this on the show last Sunday, on the Sunday show, funnily enough, because it's on a Sunday. We said, if there are time travellers, is there an international protocol that means that they don't actually reveal themselves? In other words, have they all agreed not to say that I'm a time traveller from the year whatever? Or the other alternative is there are none.
That's probably a bit in the middle, isn't it, really? There's probably some, I think.
It's a bit more of the old Liverpool for me. There are none. Now, I'm going to ask Amy, who's doing our technical production tonight, to do me a big favour. So when we come out of our commercials, this is a little bit of the artifice of radio that we're talking about here. Can you find that bit of music that is the theme from The Prisoner? I should be talking to you during the commercials, really. But yeah, just...
Why not?
It's
freeform. That one that Hayley sent me earlier?
Yes, exactly. It's got my jingle on it. And you'll make an old man very happy. All right, let's park it for a bit. Got a couple of calls. Got Matt coming up soon. And I think we might have one other caller before we cap all this. And then we've got to talk to Paul Ross about what he's going to be doing through the night here. Otherwise, they'll hang me from the nearest yardarm. So let's take some commercials. And then we'll get back and do stuff in just a second here on Talk Radio.
No nonsense discussion.
Howard Hughes
on Talk Radio.
Howard Hughes.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
I will not be stamped, briefed, debriefed, or numbered. My life is my own. That's the theme from The Prisoner. Mixed into my own jingle there. We were talking about jingles a couple of hours ago here. And we had a few people talking about radio jingles. Well, that Howard Hughes is my own radio name check. Made by a company in Dallas, Texas, some years ago. Not much on the radio these days, but I just thought I'd let you hear that. And tomorrow night, it depends on what you think about this, really. I was kind of half thinking that we might try and talk a little bit, you know, not for the whole piece, but for a little bit about iconic TV. maybe talk a little bit about The Prisoner with somebody who's an expert on it and what it all means. But if you don't want to do that, then that's fine. Just let me know. And we're democratic like that, really, you know. It's perfectly fine. That's how we roll. Mal in Belfast says, if there are time travellers, they must be making a fortune on duty-free. Thank you, Mal. The way your mind works. What else? Lou talking about olives. We've had a surprising reaction about olives here. A couple of people talking about olives.
No, it's all kicked off.
It's all kicking, all the olives, it's all kicking off with the olives tonight. It's all, I wish I could do a Frank Bruno laugh. It's all kicking off with the olives. Lou says, I love olives, but was only aware of green and black ones. Where can I find red ones? And are they, why are they evil? I didn't know they were. Are they red olives?
They are, they're the ones in between. So you know they get the black ones that are actually black.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's green ones, it's a green. But you know the ones that are like maroon, reddy colour?
Mm-hmm. Aren't they the ones with pimentos in them?
Maybe.
Because they go through me something rotten, those.
Thanks for that information.
I'm sorry, I can't eat those.
I won't ever buy you any.
No, I can't. There are some foods that some of us have to avoid.
I told you they were evil. See, I was correct.
And the ones with the jalapenos, they're the worst, you know.
Oh, yeah, no, I can't deal with those.
Can't do the jalapenos.
No, can't deal with anything.
How did we get to talking about olives then?
Salads. You were talking about.
And of course, for those of us of a certain generation that used to watch repeat TV shows, you say the word olive, and you think of On the Buses, which you won't have seen, Hayley. You never saw On the Buses?
No, Paul Ross will be able to talk to you about that all day.
You haven't seen On the Buses, you haven't lived. Olive was a character in that, and they used to pronounce her name Olive. What are you doing, Olive? Let's get to... Save me, Matt. Let's get another caller on. Here's Matt. Matt, whereabouts are you?
I am just outside Belfast.
Are you? Well, nice to have you on, Matt. What do you want to say?
Well, just about the paranormal. I'm hoping to bridge the topics of paranormal and time travel.
Okay, well, please do it.
Okay. Well, ultimately, we perceive time as being linear in the sense that, you know, one thing happens, goes from one to another, and that moment in time passes. But perhaps... maybe time isn't linear, we just perceive it to be that way. And whenever people are seeing ghosts, you know, it's not actually some entity there in your presence. You're maybe just seeing a glitch in time.
Right, so I've heard something like this before. Is it like an old LP and the arm on the LP skips to another track just for a second?
Yeah.
Right.
A jump in the space-time continuum.
Well, I mean, that's the academic way of putting it, and very well put, Matt. But there are many people who say that there, now scientists are starting to say this, that that is how time works. And that there may be such a thing, well, we know there's such a thing as the space-time continuum. But the nature of time may not be linear at all. It may not be. We start at the beginning, we go to the end, you know, well, there isn't an end. That just builds out continuously. Perhaps you're able to selectively jump between different parts of that continuum. And if you can, that's called time travel. That silenced you, didn't it?
Oh, he's gone. He's time traveling.
Come on now, Matt. You're the man who said space-time continuum.
I was in the Roman times there for a moment, sorry. That could well be the case. But surely if time travel is possible, would a worrying thing not be if people used history to their advantage and changed events a la... Marty McFly and this.
Well, that's the paradox, isn't it? You know, if you make changes, if you go back, say, to the 50s, you make a change there. Well, if you go back to, you know, long, long time ago, if you go back to whenever it might be, then you wouldn't be here, or you might be somebody else.
That's it, exactly.
God, that's a thought, isn't it? If you could go back to any era, or forward to any era, but maybe back, where would you go?
Well, tell me this. Are you protected? Are you exposed to the elements and the environment? Are you in a sort of bubble?
I don't know.
In this time travel.
Does it matter?
I'd love to go back to, like, Roman times and, like, Dark Age Britain.
Right.
And, like, the time of the dinosaurs, and you just wouldn't want to get eaten or clubbed over the head.
I've had exactly the same thought as you. I've thought, I'd love to go back and see, like, medieval times, but I don't want to catch some horrible disease there.
Got that.
Yeah. No, it's a fascinating thought. Matt, thank you for that. Anything else you'd like to say before we have to go?
Well, I this is oddly synchronistic as well. My brother Aaron is a big listener and a big fan of the show, Howard.
Oh,
I'd love it if you could give him a shout out.
Was that Aaron?
Aaron,
this is Howard Hughes from the Unexplained at Talk Radio. Thank you very much for listening to my show, Aaron. And we've had your brother on tonight, and thank you very much for being part of it all. And I, you know, as a man used to say on the telly, I don't think he meant it, but I do. I mean that most sincerely.
Thank you, Howard. Ironically, Aaron is in a bit of trouble, and he has been being defrauded. He thinks he's going out with a 18th century Contessa, but oddly the Contessa has a PayPal account based in Nigeria. So tell him he needs to knock that on the head.
Well, I think there's only one piece of advice, really. It's one they used to give on a television show in the 1990s or 80s, I think it was. Be careful out there, Aaron. That's all we can say. Matt, thank you for that. I take it that was a joke. If it wasn't, then I think we've got a whole hour of the unexplained there. What do you say, Hayley?
I think it can easily fill a whole 3 hours, to be honest.
Oh, I would say so, too. He's definitely got the gift of the speech. Ray. Hello, Ray.
Hiya, Howard. How are you doing?
I'm good. What's going on?
Well, I'm fishing down Penarth Beach.
Oh, Ray, we spoke before you were fishing last time.
That's
are
right.
Are you always fishing?
I'm always fishing, and we spoke to the guy from Boston, I think, who predicted that I wouldn't catch any fish.
Right.
And he was quite correct, and I didn't catch any fish, but he said to focus my attentions on things, and I've been more successful subsequently. But time travel.
Hang on. You came on so that our listener can catch up here. I remember you came on when we had one of our, I think it was the astrologer. I think it might have been William Stick Evers in the US. Is that right?
He had a new technique.
It's all in here.
He had a new technique of predicting the future.
That's him. He's got a technical, scientific, computer-style technique that he says is a way of doing astrology. And he said to you, I think, that the particular night when you phoned in, and we talked about, because I told you I, as a kid, used to fish around Tenby, and that's not very far from where you are.
No.
And he said to you, you're not going to catch any fish. And you're telling me he was right.
He was right. I packed up and I went home. But he did say that I should, you know, refocus my attention on fishing, and which I've done and have been successful in the interim.
Now look,
and that was good.
You know, I was never really a serious fisherman. As a kid, I used to have a rod and line, and I think I told you the story on the radio last time of when my dad and mum took me to a place called Saundersfoot. Do you know Saundersfoot?
I know Saundersfoot. It's a lovely restaurant overlooking the sea there.
When I was a kid, the weather was different. I think that's well accepted now, and it used to rain a lot in Saundersfoot. It probably still does. Well, I can remember one day I had my little fiberglass fishing rod. Mm-hmm. And I went out, it was quite windy and rainy, and my dad said, you know, just to get me out of the car, really. My mum and dad sat in the car reading the News of the World or whatever, you know, like people used to do. So they were doing that, they said, all right, go and do some fishing then. It was blowing a gale, but, you know, I was 11 years of age, who cares? It's fine. So I'm thinking, I'm going to do a really good cast out here, and I'm going to show them I'm going to catch something. So I lean back, and I cast out with this thing. The next thing I'm thinking, I've got something. And indeed, I did. I had a man 10 yards away wearing a parka. I caught the parka. This guy was furious. He was going to rip my head off in the nicest possible way. My poor father had to get out of the car and sort him out. So just, sorry about that. Very sorry about that. You know, any damage, we'll just take the case. So I think that's why I don't do any fishing anymore, right?
Do you say? You should take it up. It's a nice, peaceful, tranquil kind of experience, and you get to kill stuff, you know.
Well, I tell you, we can't advocate that. So you don't throw them back then?
I always put them back as soon as I catch them, and I take them. You know, I take the hook out of them. I kind of adopt them as my pets.
What?
And because you got this lovely little.
Well, you
animal.
Give them names.
Well, I don't give them names.
No.
But you got this lovely little thing in front of you, and I place them back gently and watch them swim off, and that's a lovely thing to experience, to see them go back and, you know, grow older and be caught another day.
Of course, it could be. I mean, look, this is, you know, I don't have any position on this particular debate, but there would be those who might say, were they to be saying it here and now, which they're not, that, you know, why do you want to interrupt their nice day? There they are, you know, calmly floating along, having a nice fishy little life, and suddenly you appear.
Well, I don't really have an argument to present to you on that one, really, but it's a bit of sport, and it's an enjoyable thing.
Do they feel, I mean, I suppose I should ask a scientist, really, but do they feel pain when you get the hook in them?
Well, I've read many books on fishing and stuff, and the general consensus is that they don't feel pain, but, I mean, if you've got a hook in your mouth, then, you know, from a human perspective, you'd think that would be painful, you know.
Well, yes, I mean, you know, if I had a hook in my mouth, I'd be calling the coppers or writing to my MP, absolutely. You know,
sure.
It's not good. but the nice thing, and the picture that you painted for me last time, and the one that you're painting for me now, Ray, is that fantastic outdoors that you're enjoying.
It is, and it's wonderful out here right now. You got it's a bit cloudy, but you usually got the stars, and you see shooting stars, and you can see the whole landscape. And it really is, you know, a fantastic thing to experience.
And I did a little tour around Wales a couple of weeks ago. After I'd done my show in Liverpool, I drove all around Wales, land of my fathers. And I went to Port Meirion, I went to Llangollen, and I ended up in a place, have you heard of Gwybod? Do you know Gwybod?
No, I don't know that, no.
Gwybod is near Cardigan. And I stayed in a hotel on a cliff top there, actually called The Cliff. And it was just fantastic. The air was so clean. You know, it was just, and I just thought to myself, what am I doing living in a big built-up area, breathing muck for, when I could be living somewhere like this? But the thought
now I can smell the sea and the fresh air, and it's absolutely gorgeous, you know, the waves are coming in. And
nice.
It really is.
Is the moon glinting on the water?
I can't see the moon at the moment, but
I was hoping it might be.
Most often I can, but you see, I've seen the most amazing shooting stars. You know, like not just the ones that go zip, but I've seen shooting stars that like look like sparklers.
Well, I'm very envious because I think an awful lot of us who have to live in towns and cities, and I don't have to live in the inner city, but I live in the outer city area. It's just not the same. The air's not as clear. And I don't think you get the chance to think, Ray. But that's another point. Listen, we must speak again. Call again, Ray. Thank you.
I didn't get the time travel.
Oh, well, good. Tell me quickly then, because I've got a time travel with Paul Ross here. He's coming. He wants to tell us about his show next.
Well, I just wanted to say that I've been doing it since 1962.
What?
And I can only go forward.
You tell me now.
Yeah, I can only go forward in time, and I've been doing that since 1962. I can't go backwards. I wish I could.
Mm-hmm. Where have you been then?
Just living my life through from 1962 till now.
All and, right, let's park it there then. Are you around tomorrow night?
I'll give you a call.
Give me a call tomorrow night, and we'll talk about time travel, because otherwise Paul Ross is going to string me up, and that's no good. Paul Ross is here. From 1 o'clock.
Good morning, guys.
I think
that chap there was saying he was just living. He's been time travelling since the day he was born in 1962. I think he
made. I kind of had this view. What was that series that Scott Bakula was in? You know, the one Quantum Leap.
Brilliant show that was.
Great show that.
Well, they inhabited different bodies.
I thought, my God, this is pay dirt. Right at the end of the show, I get Ray on. He's like Scott Bakula in, and then he says, "Well, I was born in 1962, and I've been travelling through to what? So have I.
Can't go back though.
No, exactly.
Except through memories. We've got memories." An amazing journey on the show. We spoke to him earlier this week. He was very keen with his team to set a world record. He's the former commander of the International Space Station, a man called Colonel Terry Virts, and the job was to mark the 50th anniversary of the moon landings and also the 500th anniversary this September of the first circumnavigation of the globe by Magellan and his crew. Magellan never made it. He died en route. Well, they were trying to do it in the under the current record, which is 49 hours and 59 minutes. It was from pole to pole. They had to stop and refuel at least three times, picking up a Russian cosmonaut on the way, and we've got the man himself on it, and all I can say, folks, is the record has been broken. So we're going, and he was travelling at something like, the average speed would have been around 600 miles an hour, which I says incredible, And then he said, well, he said, to be honest, not really, because on the space station we were going at 17,500 miles an hour. He said, the time it takes me to do this, I could have gone around the Earth 33 times in the space station. So he's an absolute legend, this bloke. Terry Virts.
Terry, and the way these people talk, they do it in such a matter-of-fact way, don't they? It sounds like
it's just they're all trained. It's just their kind of every, it's a reflex for them, isn't it? Brilliant stuff.
It's another day at the Intergalactic Office. That's I am going to listen to that on the way home. Thank you, Paul.
Excellent.
Paul is here after the news for 1 o'clock here on Talk Radio. Well, do you know what? Compared with doing the unexplained, and I talked at the beginning of this, how, you know, my training of doing all those years of news, I usually prepare myself within an inch of my life. And this is a completely different experience. And Hayley was the person, my wonderful producer Hayley Hayes tonight, who said...
Oh, she's not that good.
You don't know, she's brilliant.
Thanks, Paul.
Excuse me?
I'm pleased that
she's,
I produce
She's not
him.
All that. And I'm joking, of course.
I know.
Have you seen that pink handbag of hers?
I have.
It's got, well, just so you know,
it's got a brick in it.
Exactly.
It's just for you.
Pretty in pink. Yeah. And you're back tomorrow morning, tonight as well, though. Oh,
apparently so.
Brilliant stuff.
Yeah, it's all good news. All good news.
Three days work on the trot. That's not like you, Howard.
I know. What am I going to do with all the money? My God. I'll buy me groceries this week for a start off. So that's the way we're going to park it. If you were trying to get through tonight, then how about trying it again tomorrow at the same time? Same time, same place. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you very much for the nice things you've said on the Twitter and on the text and stuff like that. But if you didn't get through tonight, or you were, I think a lot of people, they think, and they email me after the Sunday show, certainly, they say, well, I was going to ring, but let me tell you this. Well, if you ever have one of those gunner moments and you think you're going to ring, do it. It's 0344-499-1000. And if you don't want to ring me, then certainly ring Paul Ross after me from 1 o'clock, because you won't be disappointed. You never will be.
And it might be.
Well, Paul, come on now. Don't sell yourself short, Paul. You know, I always thought you were the John Lewis of broadcasting, never knowingly understood.
I'm a lot the Little these days.
Well, my name is Howard Hughes. If you're wondering who this has been, my usual show is on Sunday, and I shall return at 10 o'clock tonight. Be here for that.
This is Talk Radio.